Good evening. I'd like to call the September 4th, 2018 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. I would like to call the meeting to order. Would you all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic.
Roll call of members.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Present.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis? Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Kellis? Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. I am pleased to have two proclamations today. So I wanted to first start with the Tommy Comes Home Day in Tompkins County. Mike? Paul, are you coming up for that one? Or is there someone else from the Tommy Plain group? Well, is there anybody? What? Are you part of the Tommy Plain group? Okay, I think you probably are identified. That sounds good. So I will read this. Whereas the Thomas Morse S-4 Scout was an advanced high-speed trainer designed for the United States Army Air Corps and used in World War I, built by the Thomas Morse Aircraft Company located on South Hill in Ithaca. And whereas the Scout played an enormous role in the early years of aviation and became affectionately known throughout the aviation world as Tommy. And whereas in total there were only 600 of these planes built, with 13 planes still in existence today, and the only one in fully restored condition to fly, Tompkins County's very own Tommy plane. And whereas over 15 years ago, the Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation first visualized the Tommy Comes Home project. And whereas after many years of hard work by the Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation, it has now nearly fulfilled their dream of bringing Tommy home, restoring it to flying condition and flying it on its 100th birthday. And whereas the Tommy will fly on September 29, 2018, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And whereas Tompkins County recognizes the many years of hard work by the Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation to restore the Tommy plane. And whereas Tompkins County also recognized Dr. William N. Thibault for his donation of the Tommy plane to the Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation and takes great pride in the fact that Tommy has finally come home to Ithaca. And whereas following the centennial flight, Tommy will be displayed at the new Tompkins Center for History and Culture located in downtown Ithaca. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim September 29th, 2018, as Tommy Comes Home Day in Tompkins County. And, Mike, I know you've been, Mike Hall is our director of the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport and has been very involved in the project. And I thank you for your support of the project, and you can pass this along to the folks even closer involved.
Well, thank you, Martha. And the Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation has been working on this restoration for the better part of 10 years. And for those of you who would like to see the airplane before the 29th, it's about 50 feet from my office, and you can come out and have a private tour. But I think the thing that's impressed me about this airplane is how meticulous and fine the work is. And you think about the workforce in this county 100 years ago that was able to produce hundreds of these aircraft in a year's time. And it's really a work of engineering excellence and art, particularly for the time. So we're hoping that all of you will be able to come out to the airport on the 29th. We're also hoping that the weather will be right. It has to be kind of particular because this is not a modern jet airplane. And you'll be able to see the airplane fly, and then for many years thereafter, it'll be in the new History Center downtown. So thanks to all of you for recognizing the achievement by the Ithaca Aviation Heritage Foundation, and we'll hope to see you on the 29th.
Thank you very much, Mike. And are Crystal Escobeda or Carolina Osorio Gil here? Wonderful. Welcome. Come on up. Whereas Latinx Heritage Month in Tompkins County is joyously celebrated from September 15th through October 15th, 2018, and whereas September 15th was chosen as the starting point for the celebration because it is the anniversary of independence of five Latin American countries, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua, and whereas Tompkins County is home to an active, growing, and civically engaged Latinx community, and whereas virtually every aspect of our community's life has been influenced by Latinx, whether in arts, medicine, government, labor, business, or volunteerism, and whereas the 500-year-old Latinx culture, steeped in tradition and centered on principles of family and community, strengthens the fabric of our entire society, now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim the month of September 15, 2018, through October 15, 2018, as Latinx Heritage Month, and together with our entire community, join in celebration and recognition of the Latinx community and salute the Latino Civic Association of Tompkins County for its outstanding work on behalf of Latinx throughout Central New York.
Hi, I'm Crystal Escobedo. I am the new director of Cultura. I want to thank the entire legislature. Thank you again for accepting this on such short notice. And I'm not sure if this is the first county like proclamation. It doesn't matter. I want to thank everyone for considering and wanting to recognize the Latinx population in Tompkins County, and I hope you will consider them as you make decisions, particularly for, you know, the entire population that I am here to represent, that is the entire Latinx population, those that can't be here and those that can't vote. I hope you will consider them in your decision-making. And we are having a kickoff party at the Elks Lodge on the 15th at 7 p.m. I hope you can all make it. There's going to be performances and music and food, and we always have a good time every year. So you're all invited.
Thank you very much, Crystal. We appreciate it. All right, we're at public privilege of the floor. I have a number of blue sheets here, and I will, if anybody else would like to speak, there's some more in the back. Just fill them out and bring them up. By signing a sheet, you agree. You agree to the following rules. I agree to a three-minute time limit, and you'll see the clock on the wall. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted, and I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. First, I have Maura Kennedy-Smith and then Frank Proto.
Thank you. I'm here because I'm actually the adjacent homeowner to the proposed DOT.
Excuse me, Mark. Could you go a little closer to the
sure.
mic?
Sure. Sorry. I'm here because I'm the adjacent homeowner to the proposed DOT site. It's actually going to be in our front yard because our home does not face the road. It faces the field where that's going to be built about 200 feet from my front yard and where my children play. So obviously I'm not happy about that, My main concern is why, out of this 53-acre parcel, the 15 acres closest to my house are where this is planned to be located. I'm told there were some issues with flight paths and so forth, but we never saw any kind of map. In fact, we saw an earlier map of a proposed build in 2016 that really makes it appear as though there were proposed office buildings in those parts of the parcel that are not next to any residences. Our residence and the one next to it are really the closest residences to that larger 53-acre parcel. So if there's any way of changing the location of the parcel to be sold, that's something we'd really like the legislature to look into. I have some other neighbors here. We had very, very little notice of this meeting, so I'm not as prepared as I would like to be. But another thing is that the DOT has not finalized its plans for where things are to be situated. And we have met with representatives of the DOT and the state and the airport, and I appreciate them taking the time to talk to us. But this is really going to have a devastating effect on our property, on our enjoyment of our property, and on the value of our property. So anything that can be done to mitigate that, I'm not really sure if planting a bunch of shrubbery is going to do it. It's a huge facility, and you'll be seeing some pictures of what the current facility looks like, and that's going to be in my front yard, and I would like to see some really significant buffering occur if it's going to. I mean, essentially, this is a constructive taking. I know that it's good for the county that this land's going to be freed up at the waterfront for development, but it's literally going to decimate our property value and the property for our neighbors. I wanted to just point out on this environmental impact form, there's a number of things that are incorrect. It's going to substantially increase the traffic in that area and the noise pollution. We're going to have salt trucks coming in and out of our yard all night long. That's a substantial environmental impact that was not reflected on that form. We also take issue with some of the wetland issues on that form as well, because a lot of that land, though not federally recognized wetlands, which is in fact adjacent to that, a lot of that land is wet, and they're planning to build a salt shed on that. And we're very concerned about the environmental impact of that. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mara. Frank Proto, then Jude Rose.
Is this on?
Yes.
Good evening. Frank Proto, Town of Caroline. The first, I'd like to, as chairman of TCAT, I'd like to thank those of you that were able to make the budget meeting last week and participate in this both ends of the strategic planning process. That's moving along, and you'll hear more about that probably within 2 months by October. I'm here to ask your help, and I'm here to talk a little bit about a topic that some of you will remember when I sat around this desk. I was infamous for consumer affairs items. What I want to talk about for 2 minutes is New York State Electric and Gas. Several of you have taken up positions regarding fracking, regarding pipelines, and whatnot as they pertain to NYSEG. I'd like to take up a position that asks for your help regarding consumers. In case you missed it, in Friday's paper, there was the smallest possible legal ad put in by NYSEG. Ever heard of the abandoned property law? If people, and those of you around this table will admit there are thousands of individuals in our county that have NYSEG accounts, whether it's electric or gas. In addition, there are thousands of people who used to live here that have accounts or had accounts. Well, they have deposits on file with NYSEG, and if they go unclaimed within a certain period of time, it's like the banks and the insurance companies. The money goes to the state controller. Well, guess where NYSEG is publishing and making it available for anyone who wants to read if their name is on that list? The NYSEG Customer Relations Center at 18 Link Drive, P.O. Box 5224, Binghamton, New York. You can go down and review it. My plea is that one of you, or several of you, might appeal to NYSEG to put this online. Those of you that know me know I'm challenged by that. But put it online so people can read if they have a deposit that they have not claimed. And put a printed copy. We still have a NYSEG consumer office up here on Route 13. I will be happy to leave a copy of the ad or the listing and just would appreciate your help. Thank you.
Yeah, Frank, I'd be happy to take that. Thank you very much. Yeah, great. Thank you. Judy, our former legislator and current representative on TCAT, TCAT's board. Thank you very much, Frank, for everything you do. Okay. Jude Rose and then Bill Kennedy Smith.
Do I wait the clock? Do you want the clock? The clock's not reset, but I don't think I'll take the 3 minutes anyhow. Good evening, everyone. It's great to see old friends, familiar faces I haven't seen for a long time here on the council, on the legislature, excuse me. I'm representing the Child Development Council and here to introduce myself as your new child care planner. Thank you for your commitment to children and families in this community. I'm about a month into my work and just want to let you know a little bit of what I've done so far and put my face to your project. So this morning I began the prototype part of the project, met with some Cornell students who are working on beginning designs for prototype, and we have already engaged another professor at Cornell for another piece of that in the spring, so that piece is moving along. I've had the opportunity to meet with several people in the community, including Lisa Holmes here in our room, regarding work that's been done about aging in place, and have begun drafting a sort of a PR document for builders and developers that would make this easy, trying to cross what regulations would be required to make simple changes and trying to incorporate some of the aging in place, particularly the visitability work, in this conversation as well, because that serves child care and elderly folks, or people that just need to age in place for very many issues of accessibility. I've also been to an IURA meeting, and I'm familiar with some of the ways that projects are presented now and learning more and more about where my place is in the process. I've had some very positive feedback from a few different architects and designer at Stream Collaborative. So I have people, we are talking about it, and ideas are coming around whether or not they're in a group family home-based situation in an affordable housing situation or not. The conversation is up, and hopefully we will at least increase the supply in the end product if what we have a product is a prototype, and increase supply, we still got more supply. We're also meeting, I've been met with the Workforce Development Board, and we'll be speaking with their staff about just raising this issue when people are talking about their career interests, as well as the AFCU Business Sense kinds of programs. And I think that's it for my preparation. But thank you again, and it's nice to see everyone's face in person, and I look forward to working with you in our community.
Thank you very much, Jude, and we look forward to seeing your work. I appreciate your diving in. Bill Kennedy Smith and then Sue Reed.
Hi. Thank you very much. My wife spoke earlier. We live adjacent to 15 acres that are being proposed to be sold to the DOT. I will hop right back in there and say that and pick up where she left off. There are a number of inconsistencies on the environmental assessment form. I would point out number 18, first of all. Does the proposed action include construction or other activities resulting in impoundment of water and other liquids, therefore retention pond? They have checked no, which on the latest proposed design that was actually sent to me by our representative, Mr. Sigler, there is clearly outlined a pond. So if that's changed, I don't know. And I will also say, too, there was mention of a small stream that goes across in the southern part of the proposed property. There's no mention of the water that flows through the northern part of the property through there's actually a small structure in the corner of our property. It's everybody asks me what it is, and I say, well, that's the spring house. It is literally just a concrete foundation that's got a little house over it, and it's a well. It's always full. Water goes down through the side of my property right through where they're proposing to build the salt barn. It's always full. It's always full of water. And as far as I know, they have not completed all of their surveying. There were surveyors out there last week, and I talked to one of them, and he said, yeah, we've still got work to do. We'll be out there next week. This sale of this property seems very premature to me, because once it's sold, they're going to be able to do whatever they want with it. Yes, they're going to consult with the town of Lansing, but they really have no power to change anything. They don't have any teeth to do anything about it. So I feel as though once the sale goes through, we're going to have very little say-so about what happens. Another thing is another one of my neighbors wrote a letter. He wasn't able to be here tonight, but he did write a letter. And I would like to submit that for the record, if I could. I also have pictures. The first three pictures are just of our property and the field, and I'd like to submit these for the record if I can. I only have a few seconds, but you can see that's where my children play. A view of our house from where approximately they're going to build the cargo truck bays. And then behind that, I have four pictures of the current DOT and what that looks like and what our view is going to look like, especially when the leaves fall off the trees and from the second floor of our house. I'd like to submit all these for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Sue Reed, and then Brendan McQuaid.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak, and I do applaud each one of you for all of the work that you do each day for us. I am ashamed to say that I did not know anything about the sale of this property, and I live at 39 Hillcrest Road, which is almost across the street. And I am appalled that I did not know. I do get the newspaper. My address is 39 Hillcrest Road, Ithaca. However, I vote in Lansing. So I'm kind of one of those people that doesn't live anywhere. But after living here 6 years, coming from another state, this is all new. And I just ask you somehow to let the people who are going to be so incredibly affected by this, not that it's bad, not that it's all negative, but just let us know. That's all I'm asking.
Thank you, Sue. Brendan McQuaid, and that's the last sheet I have. If anybody else wants to speak, go ahead and get a blue sheet for us.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. My name is Brendan McQuaid. I live on the East Hill. I teach sociology and criminology at SUNY Cortland. I'm here today to talk against the proposal to expand the Tompkins County Jail by adding extra space for programming and recreation. I understand this is being brought up at the public safety meeting tomorrow. I'm unable to make that meeting, so I just wanted to give my comments here. So over the past several months, the various communities of Tompkins County have spoken loud and clear on the issue of jail expansion. I myself have worked on these issues with Decarcerate Tompkins County and the local chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. We don't want to see the jail expanded. We want to see bold solutions. We participated, many different people from these organizations participated in different parts of the jail study. We were very happy when we saw the CGR report come out. And I'd like to highlight their second recommendation, which was, quote, to address systemic issues such as racism, affordable housing, transportation, employment, and poverty. The report notes that these issues are beyond the scope of the study, that they were that we were asked to do by the county, but they impact directly on the jail population and the overall quality of life and opportunities available for the residents. So I'm wondering, while there is this kind of rear guard attempt to expand the jail, is there any similar measures to address these structural problems laid out by the CGR report? What are we doing on this front, and why have we defaulted to what some people call carceral humanism, or the tendency to recast jails as service providers? So we don't want a nicer jail. We don't want a more humane jail. We want to see a gradual reduction of the jail population to zero and a closure of the county jail. Right? We reject punitive solutions like home monitoring and drug courts. So what we're really calling for, and what I think a lot of the community has called for here, is a paradigm shift in our political thinking. Right? We need bold ideas to undo mass incarceration. We need to decriminalize social problems and provide for the basic needs of every member of our community. In the town, in the county, there's lots of good ideas about how to address this. The Ithaca plan. I challenge you all to think more innovatively and not expand the jail. Thank you.
Thank you, Brendan. Is there anybody else who'd like to address the legislature? All right. Thank you all very much. We really do appreciate members of the public coming to address us. And thank you. Some folks during a legislator comment may address some of the points that have been raised, but we don't directly engage back and forth. I think I saw we have a slot for municipal officials. Did I see Duxon come in? Are there any municipal officials here tonight? All right. Thank you very much. Legislator privilege, then. I got Deborah, Dan, Anna, and Ann.
Sev, thank you. This, in its way, is a municipal official announcement. In my life before the legislature, I was on the planning board in the village of Lansing, and I was also on the Greenway Committee. And one of the major projects that we worked on was the design of a new park for our village, which was going to be our major big park in the village. It's on Northwood Road, just off Warren. And we are having our grand park opening, although the park isn't completely finished. It's close enough. It will be on Sunday, September 16th, from 1 to 3, and you are all cordially invited. And I've got to say, this is probably the most exciting thing I've ever done in my life, because usually I just cranked out piles of paper, which produced more piles of paper, and the lawyers here know what that feels like. And this time, we drew things on paper, and lo and behold, there's a park and playgrounds and playing fields and pads. So please join us on the 16th. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Dan.
Once upon a time in Danby, there was an event, an annual event called the Danby Fair. And then a number of years ago, it morphed a little bit into Danby Fun Day. And we took last year off, and it's now coming back as Danby Community Day. So I'm inviting you all to that. That's Saturday, September 15th from 11 to 3. There'll be music, chicken barbecue, auction, games, book sale, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Anna.
So first, I'm just going to do one more plug for the Southern Tier AIDS Program fundraiser. That is this Saturday. That's the AIDS ride. I know a few of us will be in it. Rich is riding. I'm going to try and ride as long as I can. We'll see how long I make it, hopefully the 102. We have a previous legislator also biking, Will, a couple city common council members. So we've got a huge crew. So if you haven't donated already, I encourage you to go to the AIDS Ride website and donate. The other thing, I wanted to respond to comments about the jail expansion just very briefly. I've been involved in this for the 3 years that I've been on the legislature, now three some whatever years I've been on the legislature. And I have been very proud of the work that the government has done. I would really appreciate if the community would stay involved and stay educated on what the county has been doing, from the development of the LEAD program to the current development of the mental health court to increased assessments, mental health assessments, so that people aren't sitting in the jail in times in which they necessarily shouldn't be, from expansions of program in probation to a mobile crisis unit. I could go on and on and on and on and on. It's amazing what is being done in the community. Many of the projects that were identified in the CGR report, those have been implemented. Many of the programs in the drug plan from the city that were outlined have begun. So I am happy to report that there has been a consistent significantly low number of people in the jail. Even with the variants removed, we have managed to keep that significantly low because of all the interventions that we have done. There are some structural issues. It's not simply making a luxury jail that we're looking to do, but actually addressing significant issues in the jail infrastructure itself, including problems with the HVAC system. So I think that having a place where people can actually do programming is not a luxury. So I just want to address some of those things, and I really encourage people to speak to any of us as legislators. Get educated on the topic as much as you want. I'm sure every single one of us would be available to speak about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. I was going to say some very similar things myself, so thank you for covering that. Anne Corman and then Mike Sigler.
Thank you. I just wanted to piggyback what Anna said as far as the AIDS ride. I spoke to a couple of people at the Labor Day picnic this weekend, and they said they still need volunteers also, so to along the stops to give people water and things like that. And particularly they need volunteers along the Black Diamond Trail, which would a lot of those places are going to be in the shade. So in case the heat wave continues. So the second thing is I wanted to let folks know with Finger Lakes Pulse, which is a local LGBTQ group that I'm on the board of, together with the Workers' Center, we are proud to announce that we have an international comedian coming to the Hangar Theater September 21st at 8 o'clock. You can look for information about it on the Finger Lakes Pulse Facebook page, my Facebook page, and, of course, at the Hangar Theater website. And tickets are $25. And if we raise enough money, a portion of the proceeds will go to the Workers' Center. And the last thing that I wanted to mention or ask about was when we do have projects such as selling this land for the DOT, just wondering if we can change something in our system that automatically notifies people about these projects, the residents around them, so that they don't have to hear about it in some other way, or maybe not hear about it, so they can have more impact or more impactful information, and we can have more of a dialogue with them sooner.
I think we'll have a good conversation about that coming up. So thank you, Ann, for mentioning that. Anna, did I call you Ann?
No.
Okay.
If you did, it went right over.
All right.
Taken.
Mike Sigler and then Henry.
I just wanted to say, you know, although Danby Festival sounds great, the Lansing Carnival is going to be this week. And for all you folks that have a grudge against me, I will be in a dunk tank at 2 o'clock.
Oh, I know where I'm
going. For the county employees.
What's the location again?
Yes, down at the firehouse, right there on Ridge Road.
GPS for the tank.
I should do that.
You said that was Saturday?
I heard how you did against, our illustrious leader over there, so bring it, because, I heard that didn't go well. So.
I heard your daughter's working on her pitch.
Yes, so. She's been working hard. Yes, that'll be on Friday is the carnival, and Saturday, and there'll be a parade at 6 o'clock, so feel free to come down. Also, I just wanted to mention Lansing did suffer a grievous loss this past week. One of our young people took their lives. The family has been public about that. There's going to be a walk and a vigil in the coming week, I think, or week or two. And it is somebody who's close to the county, too, this family. And I just wanted to mention, you know, obviously, if you ever have those feelings, anybody out there, there is help. Please reach out to someone. It's just whenever you go to something like that and you see all these young people lining up with tears in their eyes, it's horrific. So if that's something that you ever contemplate, please reach out. And there is help out there for you. So.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much, Mike. Henry, and then Amanda, and then Mike Lane.
Yes, I have a number of points to make. But the first one is that no one mentioned the election next week, next Thursday, September 13th. Please get out and vote. Vote early, vote often.
Give some credibility to President Trump's charges. Yeah.
Not sure where Henry thinks we live. And that's a Thursday.
That's a Thursday. It's not on September 11th because of obvious reasons. It's on a Thursday, September 13th. I believe it's still from noon to 9, even though it's a state election, so it's a primary, so it's from noon to 9. So you can't vote early if you want to. Also, I want to talk about the International Peace Festival held at St. Catherine Siena Church on September 7th through September 9th. They have lots of bands, lots of food, lots of other stuff. Please attend. And there's also Airport Day. It's September 15th, which, you know, we can also go to from, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Also, there's a Stewart Park Inclusive Playground Community Bill starting on September 11th. Yes, I'm covering everything. So you can attend that, and I saw that Ann Coleman has signed up for that, and that other people can help out and help build a new playground.
Accessible playground.
Accessible playground. Starting September 11th. What time? Do you know the?
Go online.
Yeah, you can go online to sign up. I don't. September 11th from 8 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. And then finally, there's also one on Saturday, September 8th, there's a no-fracked gas Cayuga Foreman rally at Lansing Community Center from 10 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. People who care about the issue can go out and make their voice known.
That it? Okay.
Yeah, there are other things, but that's enough for now.
That's good enough for now. Thanks, Henry. Amanda, and then Mike Lane.
Thanks. So I just want to remind everyone, some of you may know, some of you may not, is that school starts tomorrow for most kids. Some kids don't start until Thursday, including mine. And I just want to congratulate all the mothers and fathers who were home all summer with their children. You survived.
That's a hopeful comment. All right. Thanks, Mike. And Mike Lane and then Leslin.
We had an interesting presentation last week from the folks at Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit about their budget requests for next year. It was really well attended at the Borg Warner Room of the Tompkins County Public Library. I happened to come just as the presentation was getting started and had to sit on the side up at the front of the room, which gave me the unique perspective of being able to watch not only the presentation, but the room as well. There were people there from the city, including common council members. There were people there from the county, including legislators and staff. There were people there from Cornell University. And there were people there, oddly enough, from New York State, which we were very pleased to have there. The people from TCAD had done a lot of work in preparing the presentation. Scott Vanderpool and Bill Gray both spoke to us and gave us presentations. From my perspective, what troubled me was observing some of the legislators and some of the council people not paying much attention, using their electronic devices, their cell phones, texting, doing other things, having their faces buried in their laptops. When you get invited to a presentation like that, they can expect our attention. And I think that's the courtesy that we owe them when we go to something like that. I hope that folks will think about that and put their electronic devices aside. I'm not talking about using a laptop to read an agenda or something, but I'm talking about activities during that. And please spare me any argument about multitasking. You can't. You can't pay attention and know what's going on. We are representatives, and we go to something like that to learn and to be able to be better representatives of the people who we are elected by. If we don't want to go and pay attention, then we shouldn't go. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Leslin?
Thank you, Martha. September 15th is a very busy day. There's a lot going on. I do want to encourage my colleagues and everyone else who's watching or listening. If you came last year to the GIEC birthday brunch, you know it was a fantastic time. That's happening again on September 15th from 11 to 2 at Green Star at the Space. You're all invited and encouraged to come support the organization. It's not often that I take a vacation, and I did last week, and really did not get on much electronic anything while I was away, except that I had to bring myself to watch the funeral services of an amazing statesman in John McCain. And I wanted to mention that. Look, I'm already tearing up. Regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on, this man has served and served well. His country in all ways, shape, and form. As a military person, my family, military, my husband is a veteran. To hear of his service as defending this country was very, very moving and deserving of all the praise, all the accolades, all of the applause that he could get, and not the petty nonsense. I sat and watched that funeral from top to bottom and watched folks across the board speak with passion about who John McCain was, both in his representation as well as a person, just as a person. And that's what we should be looking at when we think of people, not all the other nonsense. Sometimes we need to set aside the political crap and really see who people really are. So I want to, as this entire body, beg your indulgence to recognize the service of John McCain with a moment of silence. And I will ask for it to begin now.
Absolutely. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Leslie.
Anna, I also wanted to
remind myself, and maybe Dave McKenna or whoever else was around can help, and Annie's question about informing folks when sales or buildings or bridges or whatever is going to happen occur. Several years ago when I chaired FNI, I recall us putting in place a protocol for informing residents and community members, especially if something is going to impact them. And I'm hoping that is still in place, because it comes as a little bit of surprise to me to hear the folks who came here say that, you know, it was short notice, they didn't hear about this, et cetera. So I want us to really dig that out, because it really was a very good tool for making sure people are informed when any kind of action like this is going to happen that will impact their lives and impact their property. So please, let's pull it out and do what we have to do so we don't end up in these situations. That's unfair to folks. Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. Another round, Henry?
Yes, unless I forgot something. That 13 hours from now, they'll be Leading with Love Community Walk. The Ithaca School System, Cornell University, TC3, Ithaca College, City of Ithaca, and local leaders with residents throughout Tompkins County will mark the start of the 2018 school year by community walk, leaving Stewart Park at 7:30 a.m. sharp. Last year it was rained out. This year, hopefully, it will not rain. And I invite everyone to attend.
Thank you, Henry. Anyone else? Well, that's a good reminder, Henry, because, yes, I'm signed up to do that. 7:30 in the morning, and I, most of you know I'm not exactly a morning person. I have a couple of other points for my report. I will say September 8th, Saturday, is a busy, busy day. Mike, is there the Freeville Fair this year?
Yes.
A fair at Freeville Saturday afternoon, the Ellis Hollow Fair on Janung Road is 12 to 5 on Saturday. And it's just a couple of the things. Friday night, I was sent this coming Friday night, I was sent this by Michelle Rios Dominguez, who used to work for Tompkins County, and now she's with Ithaca College. She wanted us to let people know about a special event, Stand Up and Vote. Mike Birbiglia is going to be performing at Ithaca College on Saturday, and it's to benefit Rock the Vote and a couple of other nonpartisan efforts to get students registered to vote. So tickets are on sale online. For Ithaca College students, faculty, and staff, $15. For the general public, $25. So just you want to look that up. Stand Up and Vote on Friday evening at Ithaca College. Since we last spoke, Ann Corman and Deborah Dawson and I went to Washington. And so I just wanted to report that we had a tour at the White House, along with hundreds of other tourists. The actual White House tour was not anything special for us. But then we had a three-and-a-half-hour meeting in the Eisenhower office building. This was last Thursday, a week and a half ago Thursday, with a number of administration and agency officials organized by the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs in the White House. And we heard from a range of folks from agriculture, the Trade Representative Office, Homeland Security and ICE, as well as from Kellyanne Conway about the opioid epidemic and her efforts in that program. We did not hear from two that we had expected and hoped to hear from, Ben Carson at HUD, although Jerron Smith from the White House, from the West Wing, did present. He did talk about housing issues. And we did not hear from the DOT, the US DOT. Chris Minton was supposed to have been there, but he was not in person there. We did have the opportunity, however, to present our proposal for the FAA funding for the airport. This is a clever segue, if you haven't noticed, into our next presentation about the airport project. But we did present a package that Mike Hall helped me produce on very short notice to William Crozer of the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs. And within a week, we had a conference call with several people at the US DOT. So last Thursday morning, we had a conference call, and Jason and Mike joined me on that to explain our project, to promote it, to point out how elegantly and perfectly the application fit in the criteria for end of fiscal year 18 funding for under the FAA Airport Improvement Program. And we're very hopeful that that application will be accepted and funded. It was a proposal for $7.9 million for fiscal 18. Fiscal 19, Mike plans to apply for another $7.4 million under that same program. Our senators and our congressperson have already or are in the works in sending support letters to Secretary Chao. And so that's what part of what else you have to do. So we're trying to work those connections, and I thank Mike very much for helping to make that presentation fairly easy. And we were really, pleased to get a conference call set up that quickly. It was very impressive. So, Ann or Deborah, if you wanted to add anything, since it didn't come up before, but if you wanted to add anything about those meetings. Nothing to say, huh? Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Now, I'm going to juggle the agenda around a little bit and ask us to do our airport resolution. So we've got joint committees, the Transportation Committee and the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. So I'm going to start with Mike Lane, Transportation Chair. And Mike Hall, why don't you come on up?
We need to add some to the agenda.
Right. First, before we get started, Mike, if you would introduce Mike Hall. Too many mics, okay. If you would introduce our guest tonight, that would be great.
Certainly, Martha. There's a pretty good stack of airport resolutions that you'll be hearing about because we're coming to the end of the fiscal year. We've already heard from the public about one part of the future of the airport property, which has to do with the sale of a chunk of property to DOT for their further development. And I'd like to introduce Kathleen Joy to each of you legislators. Kathleen, if you'd step up to the mic, I think Kathleen would like to say a few words to you. And Kathleen is regional counsel for DOT. And, of course, our action with the property essentially ends with the sale of the property, and then DOT is involved in developing the future. And Kathleen is the person that, whether you're a homeowner or a legislator or an interested party, can help get your questions and concerns to the right people. Kathleen?
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. I'm also here with our regional engineer, Eric Buck, from DOT. Thank you for the opportunity to address the legislature and to the audience. What we have before you is the first step in the process. It's the contract to approve the sale. There will be many more reviews going forward, and we welcome the opportunity to work with the county and the residents. There will be an opportunity to have an environmental assessment to identify those environmental issues and possible mitigation, any avoidance, any of those types of issues that come up. We will also have a site plan, which is in development. Some of you may have seen or may have even distributed an old plan from 2016 that was part of a feasibility study. That's not what we're doing. That was an old plan. It was something that the county had developed. So I just wanted to make it clear that that's not what we're doing. Our plans are in development. Because we have gotten input from some of the residents, because we've gotten input from some of the county, we've gotten input from FAA, and all of those are going to be taken into consideration. So as we move forward with the process, we will be available to listen to your comments, to address them as we go along. And when we do have a final design and a plan, there will be plenty of opportunity for public comment. So we just wanted to say thank you very much for adopting or considering the resolution today. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Kathleen. We appreciate your being here in case there are additional questions. So great. Thank you. All right, let me go to Mike and to Dave. You The Joint Committee of Facilities and Infrastructure and Transportation met earlier this afternoon. So we have some resolutions to be added. I think two of them are transportation and two of them are facilities. Is that correct?
Sounds right.
Okay. So start with Mike. These should all be in your red folders.
Can we just move them all? M, N, and O?
We'll read the titles. Mike, go ahead, read the titles.
Sure.
Yeah.
M is making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution blank of 2018, authorizing the sale of 15 acres of real property at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport located on Warren Road to the New York State Department of Transportation.
All right. Moved by Mike. Dave, you want to second that?
Yeah, I'll second.
Second that. All right. We'll vote on them all in a batch, but Mike, you want to go on the next one?
N is authorizing acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration grant to acquire snow removal multitasking equipment at Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport.
Second? Mm-hmm. Dave. Second by Dave.
O is authorizing acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration grant to install passenger boarding bridge, Gate 1, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport.
Second by Dave. And there's J, right? Wait. What? That's already on the agenda, but it's revised. Okay. On those three new resolutions, the vote is to question.
Wait a minute. M is not just what Michael read. I mean, M is the actual voting to sell it.
M is the negative declaration. The sale, authorizing the sale, that's, you should have in your red folder J.
J is the one.
Right. But J is the sale.
Yeah, we haven't done that one.
Right.
Okay. Well, just to point out, M is a weird way to phrase that, I think. But.
Huh? All right, tell you what, when we get to discussing the resolution, let's get them on the agenda first. So, all in favor of including those three on the agenda, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. So, in your original packet, resolution F, right, page 65. So this is for the Transportation Committee. Go ahead with that, Mike.
Resolution F, award of bid, passenger terminal building security expansion, phase one, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, and I so move.
Seconded by Leslin. Mike Hall, do you want to give us a thumbnail on this one?
So we know that the overall project inside the fence, if you will, or the terminal and the customs building amounts to something around $25 million divided into three phases, approximately equal. This first phase was bid on a very tight timeline in order to have the required documentation to submit to the Federal Aviation Administration for the Airport Improvement Program. So we are awarding phase one. We will be advertising phase two a little later in the fall, and then phase three a little later than that. So we'll be back to you each time. But this is phase one. We are looking at the probability of a groundbreaking ceremony on October 4th. I think that's subject to your questions. That's what we're about tonight, is getting started on phase one, which is very important because this all has to be done by the end of 2019.
Thank you, Mike. Discussion. Okay. All right, ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution F, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Resolution G, Mike? I'm sorry, G is out of Facilities and Infrastructure. Dave McKenna.
Okay, so we're talking about the resolution B on my schedule.
Yeah, I've gone back to the original legislature packet, everybody doesn't have the facilities and infrastructure agenda. So it's packet page 67.
So that's authorization to accept the FAA grant to rehabilitate taxiways A, D, and E and northwest portion of the general aviation ramp design at Ithaca Regional Airport, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And I so move.
Thank you. Seconded by Shauna. Discussion. My call? Give a little explanation.
Question. I guess it's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. This is one of the kind of things that we do during the operational improvements every year. We don't do this
right.
Every year.
Right. Okay. Sure, I can say that. The standard development for a federal project is to have a feasibility study, a detailed plan, and then execution. So we're marching down the trail in this particular project with this grant.
Okay. And the reason the facilities is moving this is it's not part of the expansion project. This is part of normal operations.
Correct.
Okay. Great. Any discussion? Ready to vote. Rich?
Just for clarity, the county's share is $10,730. Yes. Okay.
Out of the airport budget.
Right. Yeah, it's standard federal grant, 5% New York State, 5% county, 90% federal.
Okay.
Paid for out of the airport budget.
All right. Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Dave, resolution H.
Okay. I think I got the right one here. Authorization or authorizing acceptance of FAA grant to acquire snow removal equipment, ramp dozer at Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, and then move that.
Seconded by Shauna. Any discussion? Also pretty self-explanatory. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, we are now up to I, right, Kathy? Okay. Back to the Transportation Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
Before I start, I just want to make the folks at home aware that even though we aren't having a lot of discussion about some of these resolutions, it doesn't mean we haven't talked about them over and over again up to this point and had many presentations from our county administrator and our airport director on these. I'd like to move resolution R, authorizing acceptance of a Federal Aviation Administration grant to construct aircraft rescue firefighting building feasibility study at Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. And I'm moving that.
Seconded by Leslie, and that's ID 8054, correct? Is that the number you're looking at? You said R. This is I.
Did I say that?
Yeah, so it's 8054 is the number, right?
Yes, it is.
At the top. Okay, great.
Well, I said I.
Okay. Discussion. My call a little bit about this.
Well, remember we talked about a three-step process. This is feasibility, then we go to design, then we go to execution. This project is of particular interest to you because we're going to relocate the crash fire rescue building from its current site down to an area sort of what I would say behind the sheriff, if you will. And in that sense, there are peripheral discussions to be had about whether or not any other facilities might want to be built as part of a complex in that area. And we'll be back and forth with you a lot as this matures, depending on how you decide to deal with other issues in the neighborhood, so to speak.
And this is a feasibility study. Anna?
Can you talk to us briefly about what the advantage is of moving the facility to this location?
Where it's located right now is really part of the ramp, and so you wind up with a very risky mix of emergency vehicles responding and aircraft that are parked or taxiing. So we want to take it to a part of the airport that is away from the aircraft movement area, if you will, and then, you know, you would respond from there onto wherever the problem is. But right now, as you're well familiar from being up there, you think about a dark, stormy night, you come out of the fire station, and the first thing you are is tail onto a parked airplane. It's hard to see. And or somebody taxiing by. So it's really fundamentally a safety relocation to start out with.
Is this also about consolidating fueling needs?
We have a separate application in for consolidated fuel farm. Same issue. The current fuel farm is located in a high traffic area for both trucks and planes. Not a good idea. It would go generally in the same neighborhood or quadrant, again, behind the sheriff, if you will. And more to be said to you about that as that situation matures.
Any other questions? Ready to vote on aye. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Mike, normally we would go to J, but we should go to M, correct? The negative declaration?
Yes.
Okay, which we added, so.
Resolution M. Making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2018, authorizing the sale of 15 acres of real property at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport located on Warren Road to the New York State Department of Transportation. And I move it.
Seconded by Dave. Discussion here. Amanda.
Yeah, thanks. So I can't support this. I don't know anything about it. I only learned about it tonight. I have not been provided, at the earlier meeting, Ann asked for the environmental assessment form, and Jonathan gave it, and then we made copies, so everybody had that, but I haven't had a chance to read it. Hearing the concerns of the neighbors, you know, I just don't know enough about this. And one of the whereas statements says that the Tompkins County Legislature has reviewed and accepted as adequate the environmental assessment form, and I don't know that we all have done that. Maybe some of you have, but I haven't. So I would just question why, you know, maybe I'm out of the loop, but I haven't heard about this before tonight. So I'm not up with all the airport stuff, so I apologize. But I'm not going to support this until I get a chance to read the form, gather more information. Thanks.
Thanks, Amanda. Anybody want to respond before I go to Shauna? Mike Lane?
I just want to say that this has been reviewed by staff, which is very often the case with our environmental forms. It's been looked at by our county attorney, and we have folks to do these things for us. It doesn't mean that when it says the legislature has reviewed it, we delegated that as well. It's important to note what the representative from DOT told us tonight, which is that there will be an environmental assessment done by New York State, and they'll be looking at the environmental issues as well.
Jonathan, do you want to add anything to that? You had some more to say at the committee meeting this afternoon.
Yeah. What we largely have is a timing issue. In order to move forward with the FAA, which is part of the process, which will involve both the seeker as well as NEPA, which is the federal seeker, essentially environmental review, comprehensive environmental review. But we don't get to that point until we're committed to selling the property to DOT in the event that they have, you know, that FAA approves, et cetera. So at this point, we're at the position where we really need to move forward with this. We do an environmental review, which essentially is the transfer of the property and as much as we can from what we know at this point. But there'll be a far more involved comprehensive environmental review before anything is built, and we need to do that as part of the FAA approval process.
Shauna, then Anna, then Deborah.
I also question how fast this is moving. This was the first time that many of us saw this. And I think we really have to question the livelihood of the people that are sitting here. Their property, their investments are really at stake here. And it's not something that we can make a decision on tonight and really hurry through this process. So I will not be supporting this.
Could I make a comment? Jonathan, is this correct that the environmental significance is about selling the property? It's not about constructing anything. We don't. It's not even been designed. So this, and that's what you just said, is that the, as a part of design, that the DOT will carry out the SEAKER and the NEPA, and we are not part of that. That's their project, and this is just about selling. So in a sense, what we're saying is that the ownership changing hands itself has no environmental significance.
Well, the ownership changing hands itself does have no environmental significance. The ownership will not change hands unless the project is approved by the FAA, which will involve the full environmental assessment.
So this sets it up so that the FAA will evaluate this, because they don't evaluate random things that might never happen.
Yes.
So this is necessary to move it forward, but it is not the same as the environmental study and my environmental evaluation.
It's not the complete environmental evaluation, because there are still things that are yet unknown which will be developed through the design process. Yes.
Mike Hall, did you want to say something?
I think that's a correct characterization. This has to do with the impact on the airport from a sale, which is negative. The impact of any potential development of that parcel is a completely separate piece of business defined by a variety of state and federal regulations. So in a way, this is pro forma to saying that we're in agreement to sell the land. The developer of the land bears the responsibility to do it in a way that is compliant with the applicable laws and regulations of the land.
Okay, I've got Anna, then Deborah. I'm not sure if I saw somebody else. Mike Ziegler. Okay.
So I was wondering if you could explain a little bit about the size of the parcel, the full size of the parcel. I heard someone mention a parcel size of 53 acres. This is 15 of a 53 acre. What was the process to get to these 15 out of those 53? Someone also mentioned something about the flight path. I'm assuming that was a big chunk of it. You could just explain a little bit more of that. That'd be great.
Sure. We have the 53-odd acres off the departure end of the northwest runway at the airport. And any development of that land, and it was purchased with the idea that it would be developed, has to be consistent with obstruction clearance criteria for the airport. So you could think of directly on extended centerline from the airport, you can't have anything higher than maybe an automobile in a parking lot, and you often see that when you go into larger airports. As you move out laterally from the extended centerline, then an obstruction can be higher and higher. In the discussion about this property, that plays a factor in that the height of the building that it takes place on the parcel means that this particular activity has to be farther away from centerline in order to be compliant with regulations. I would say that initially we were considering a smaller parcel as being adequate, and it was enlarged to give DOT the ability to move and mitigate within the property, so they've got more room to move what they need to do than they would have if it were a smaller parcel. So it's a larger parcel than the current site on the waterfront for that reason, so that they can mitigate the impacts of the development.
So follow-up question, if that's okay. The whole process of evaluating the environmental impact, the wetlands, the impact on the neighbors, all of that will be the responsibility of the DOT, which means that ultimately there are certain things that won't be allowed if it's going to affect significantly the water quality, for example, then those would be limitations of the development. Is that correct?
That's correct. Furthermore, though, above the state of New York sits the Federal Aviation Administration. So this really, you know, again, I'm starting to get out of my field here, but the feds delegate a great deal of EPA responsibility to the state of New York. In this case, the feds are also involved in this because the Federal Aviation Administration requires certain things to take place. So this is not a case where the state can just operate any way they want. They have to convince the federal government as well. Two layers of review, I guess, would be a way of saying that. Is that accurate, Kathleen? Yeah.
So it's just a technical exchange of property ownership at this point.
Correct.
And I would just comment that at the Transportation and Facilities Committee meeting earlier, Scott Doyle from Planning was there, and he and I spoke. He didn't speak at the meeting, but he told me that there were no wetlands, no federal or state regulated wetlands on the property at all. There's something off at some distance, but nothing on the within this property. So, Deborah, then Mike Sigler, Henry, and Amanda is what I have so far.
So, not to belabor this point unduly, but after many years on a planning board and many EAFs, it's always a difficult issue when you deal with seeker review on a transfer of property, because everybody thinks, well, I know what they're planning to do with that, and that's what you ought to be evaluating. But all you're evaluating, as Martha and Jonathan have pointed out, is a transfer of ownership. So this undeveloped piece of land that's now owned by the county will, after the sale, be an undeveloped piece of land that's owned by the state. And there is simply no environmental significance to a change of ownership on paper. I understand people's desire to slow this down or question it in view of property owners' concerns, and I sympathize with that, but I do not think that this particular resolution is the avenue to use for that end. So I will be voting for this resolution.
Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to say, since my constituents are here, I just wanted to say that I don't. It seems like these two resolutions are getting conflated to an extent. M is not the same as J. So when it comes to M, I'm looking at it going, okay, this all seems fine. When we get to J, I'll speak on a different issue. But just wanted to kind of explain that to you. They're not. And the way that the title is what I was saying is, when you write something and then you have a colon, that's basically the end of the sentence, and then we're saying authorizing the sale, but it literally makes it sound like we're authorizing the sale of this property with M, which is not what we're doing. So, anyway, that's all I had to say. Thanks.
So, again, it's evaluating the significance of the change of ownership on this resolution. I've got Henry, Amanda, and then Anna again.
I'm going to speak on J as opposed to M. But Jonathan, I mean, once we do the sale transaction, then that's it. The county has no more role in the property. Because FAA or the state, DOT owns the property and they have to deal with it. So the county has no other say about what's going on.
Well, we will, because as part of the environmental process, including the FAA approval, the county will be an involved agency, so we'll participate while DOT will take the lead. We'll participate as well.
Okay.
Amanda?
Thank you all for the discussion. Very informative. I'm still not going to be voting for it based on that, whereas, because I have not been given the information you all are very informed, much more than I. But I got one sheet of paper about this. And, you know, there was no memo. There was no, you know, explanation. You know, Mike, you said, we have planners. We have staff who does this. I trust them, but nobody gave me anything. So how can I possibly, you know, understand what's going on? So, you know, I get what you're all saying, but I will still be voting against this.
Anne and then Rich.
One thing that I do, and I think this is just maybe newness of the process, if it's a seeker, it does need to, in this case, it will go through the full review process. I understand at the state level for an environmental review, regardless of who the owner is of the property. And I think that that's really important. It will go through a full seeker. And if anybody wants to familiarize themselves with the seeker process, that will be at first in an internal, then there will be a declaration, then there'll be a public comment period, and then a final determination. And I wanted to also make that clear for everybody here. That's really important. And I wanted to make sure, Leslyn pointed out earlier, of a process that existed previously. I don't know if that process does exist. I certainly hope that it does. But whatever process we have in place, once that review process happens, I would certainly hope that all of the landowners are informed and can give their feedback on the review when it comes out in the initial proposed determination.
Rich?
I just had a clarification. This is a subdivision, so we're going to retain part of the tax parcel. Is that correct? So we'll be an adjacent landowner?
Yes. It's actually a subdivision involving more than one parcel. It's a subdivision of actually two parcels.
Okay.
So we have – did everybody get this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can see on the page with the red lines – is that what you mean, Jonathan, that the black outline of the parcel crosses a red line?
Yes. Like, if you'll see that black area, that there is, it's actually part of two separate parcels, if you can see, that are owned by the county.
Okay. All right. And anything else, Rich?
No, that was it.
Okay. Mike, you said that we were planning to sell 15 acres when the downtown site was, it's only 7.9 or something like that acres.
I think that was the discussion. Kathleen might be able to fill us in a little bit more on that, but it's a generous size site for a residence to allow them flexibility.
And can you give us a guesstimate as to how large the building will be on there? And also it would be helpful, I think, to maybe this is Kathleen or somebody else, to describe the storage of salt. This is not going to be kind of a pile of salt left on the ground. Is that correct? Why don't you go to
That's correct. We've got Eric Buck and Kathleen over here that can do a better job of describing that. And also recall this is going to be a 2018 residency, not a 40-year-old residency. So in terms of the standards to which it's built have evolved considerably since I was a kid. So,
meaning the existing residency downtown.
Correct.
Is grandfathered in with much less stringent regulations. Go ahead.
Right. I'd like to invite the people from the state to sit down next to Mike. And,
please, yes.
Because they may be talking for a while.
Yeah. Kathleen and Eric, have a seat. Yeah. And Eric, if you want to introduce yourself.
Eric Buck. I'm the resident engineer for Portland.
Please use the microphone.
Pull a microphone. Yeah, great.
So the current residency is about 7.5 acres. We were looking originally about 10 for a different site. We settled on 15 just to provide DOT with some flexibility to address any of the issues that may come up, including buffering or moving around the facility. At this point, what we have before you is a resolution to sell the land. It is not the site plan, it's not the development, because all of that is still being worked on. We still have to conduct some of our internal environmental review. We have to get some final design, And it changes depending on what we hear, what we find. And so at this point, I don't think it's appropriate to guess as to what size the building might be, where things are going to be located, because we don't know. That's preliminary. What we're here before you is to ask for the approval of the contract so that we can move forward. Part of that process is to have the county then go to FAA requesting a what they call a deed of release. That's the next step in the process. Once that happens, then DOT also has to go back to FAA for design approval. So there, as I said in my earlier statement, there are many layers of review for all of this, and there will be a full environmental assessment that is completed concurrent with the state, and FAA does that, by the way, they're the lead agency. Concurrently, DOT will comply with SEAKER, so that will be done, but that's farther down the road. The first thing we have to do is to get a written commitment, a purchase contract, which is why we're here today.
Thank you, Kathleen. Eric, did you want to add anything? Especially, you know, what does salt storage look like? What, how does that get built?
Well, the salt storage would probably be something like what you see the county has, as opposed to what we have on our site now on 3rd Street. We have a salt dome, an undersized salt dome, but that's you know some designer is going to come up with what the new facility would look like, the new salt storage facility.
Can you describe
counties? It looks like a large barn. The counties does.
Okay, and fully covered.
Yes. And there's measures taken to prevent any, you know, runoff from going off site.
Okay. Thank you, Anna.
Can you describe the daily usage of the facility? It's seasonal, not seasonal, all year round, different uses. Can you describe a little bit of the state site downtown? I'm not familiar with how many trucks are in every day, if it's seasonal, if it's dormant for some months. I have no idea.
It's year round.
So about how many trucks are going in and out of that facility?
10.
Okay. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
10.
Mike Ziegler?
I mean, it seems like we're having the discussion on the whole project now. Are we doing that?
Yeah, everybody should just remember what we just heard when we get to vote on the next one. So, and I think it might inform people in how to vote on this one as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's out of order. Deborah?
Well, I'd be glad to ask my question about the next resolution, but I do think that this really has nothing to do with the transfer of ownership. What they end up doing with it. You can't do an environmental evaluation on a site plan that does not exist. Be that as it may, I do have a question. I understand, Mike, that, you know, you draw a straight line down that runway, and the anything along that line, you've got height issues that you've got to consider. So that would pretty much limit the DOT residency site possibilities to the northern end of this piece of property. But I can't help but notice that the county owns a fair amount of property to the west of the piece that we are proposing to sell to the state. And I'm curious to know why that was not considered as an appropriate site.
I think the best answer to that takes us back to the planning department, who did an extensive look at how this piece of commercial property could be developed and considered the various elevations that are acceptable and access to major road. There's one curb cut to Warren Road here. So that's really the best answer I can give you, Deborah, is that there's a considerable amount of staff work behind this. It's tough. Any place you would put your finger on the map, there's a great deal of information has to be developed about that, and so we moved based on that information to this site.
Yeah, the advantage of moving farther west is that you're not in somebody's backyard or front yard, though.
That's where the designated wetland is, so that should be avoided.
Okay. So there is designated wetland on the county's lots, but not on the piece that we're selling to you. I see. Thank you. That does clarify that.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of, it's a complex piece of property, and again, I would just refer you back to a 160-odd page planning report that looked into all those issues and concluded that this was an acceptable use of this piece of property, this piece of this property.
Could I add one thing? This is right on Warren Road. And the further you get away, the more environmental significance you have, because you have to drive there. You have to disrupt all that property. So this is, in addition to not being in the wetland, it also minimizes the environmental consequences.
Yes. Mike Sigler and then Shauna.
Like I said, since we're talking about this and since Deborah brought it up, I mean, we own all the way over to Cherry Road, and that's not west. I mean, that's just south. That's in the what? Well, right. But even Mike said, yes, granted, there are certain buildings you can't build to a certain height, but I mean, that's pretty high. I don't know how high a salt building is. I'm just wondering, would the state consider taking the whole property so that it has even more flexibility to move the buildings, at least, further away from these folks' homes? I mean, there's nothing there on Cherry. And going back to something else, I mean, I called Mike a while back, and I'm going to ask him now. I mean, he knows. I asked him to go and look at other parcels that we own up there, because we own quite a bit of land. And I called Cornell to see if they had any available property, too. And, you know, Jeremy's not been on the road, but not even to the west of, I mean, the east of the airport. I mean, I'm looking at the county map here, and we have a lot of land over there, and I don't see any wetlands, and that's certainly more industrial than anything else around there. Maybe we can't build. Maybe that's fenced property, for all I know. But so, I mean, what did that investigation? Was there? Did we look at other sites?
Well, to the degree not beyond the airport property, no. But as far as the airport property is concerned, that is our recommendation as the best site. And remember, too, that you mentioned could we, you know, sell the entire 52 acres. The FAA's got a dog in that fight and wouldn't allow us to go there. That land has to be control of that land has to be retained to protect the airport. And, you know, there's no guarantee that at some point in the future, the state wouldn't decide to divest that 52 acres and put it up for OGS auction, and there you go. So, you know, it's part of the more strategic picture. So the airport doesn't have anything else to offer. Whether the county does, I can't comment.
All right. I think I had Deborah. No, Shauna.
Yeah, I also had questions in regards to Mike Sigler's comment, and that was initially I thought that the piece of property that we were talking about was on the western side where Cherry and Warren Road intersect. So that you're saying is wetland?
No, Cherry is closer to Airport Centerline than Hillcrest.
Okay.
This is, like, it's between Cherry and Hillcrest, right, is the right way of describing it.
Okay.
All right. I think maybe we've beat this to death. I think the point is no agency is going to do a seeker or a NEPA evaluation on land it doesn't own. All of that will happen not by county expenditures to make it happen, but by state and federal expenditures of doing the studies and working with neighbors and fully, and you know, involving the designers, because you know, you uncover things when you do an environmental review, and then you change your design. That's all in the state's hands, and we aren't having to pay for that. That is not our responsibility. I think by virtue, I think we should really understand. Kathleen, you came down from Syracuse. Erica, you're in Syracuse as well?
Cortland,
okay. I think there's a great deal, and they were here for the earlier meeting of the joint committees, which passed both of these resolutions unanimously. I think we can bank on a lot of goodwill here, and that the neighbors have been directly heard. We're going to talk with them some more. There's going to be a lot more communication, and this is a way to really move this along so that the real study can begin. It's not our job or our project. It's going to be theirs because it will be their property, and we really can't. I mean, they can't do an environmental review on land they don't own either. So if there's nothing else, anyone else? Jonathan or Jason, anything to add? All right, ready to vote? Resolution M, the negative declaration. All in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed. That passes 12 to 2. All right. Mike Lane, we have resolution J is revised, and that's in people's red folders.
I am moving the revised version,
which was adopted by committee this afternoon.
Yes. Authorizing the sale of 15 acres of real property at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport located on Warren Road to the New York State Department of Transportation, and I so move.
Second by Dave McKenna.
I'm sorry, which one are we on?
It's J. It was in your packet, but it's also as packet page 73, and there's some relatively small revisions that the committee passed this afternoon. Any discussion or questions? Mike Sigler.
Okay, so this is the issue I was going to talk on, and I got some things in on the other thing, but I'm going to talk about this a little bit more here. I frankly would like to see more of a DOT plan for this property before we sell this property. I mean, I just hearken back to the library sale of whatever 2 years ago. I mean, that took us 3 years to hammer down even, what are you going to do with this property? And, you know, I'm sorry, I would like to see more of a plan. Hillcrest Road is not a great road. I mean, Hillcrest Road is used as a cut-through road between North Triphammer and Warren Road, and people fly up and down it all the time. And I would like to know that state DOT trucks are not going to be going up and down that road. I would like to know that, you know what, we're the state, we're going to put this, we're going to try to put the buildings over here as far away from your houses as we can get, and we're going to do a bigger buffer. Or this is how many trucks are going to be going in and out. I mean, I'm in a debate right now about whether to repower a power plant with natural gas trucks, and people are talking about 60 trucks. How many salt trucks are there going to be? We're not asking that question. We're not asking all the questions that we normally ask of everybody else because it's the state, and we like this project, and I like this project. We want to get it off the waterfront. I get it. But it seems to me the state didn't do anything for 25 years to get the damn thing off the waterfront, and now, now we got to move. We got to get this done because, you know, we're moving ahead with this. Okay, well, I would like to see a better plan. I would like to see more. And I think all these people are asking for is we would like to see what your idea is because you really aren't giving us a whole lot of idea of what you're going to do. So that's where I'm at. So that's what I wanted to say, and we kind of got off on a tangent. I don't think the two are the same. You know, I saw my one guy here leave. I wish he had stayed because the two are separate issues. But, yeah, I would like to see more of a plan from the state. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Anna?
So trying to get a sense of the timeline. So we have a legislative meeting every 2 weeks, practically. I'm assuming you're – the state is in a process right now of already doing that plan, because I know your timeline is pretty tight. Is there a possibility of bringing a little bit more of an idea of where infrastructure, the dominant infrastructure might be on those, you know, 15, 17, or whatever it is, I can't even remember right now, acres versus the 7? Is that even a possibility in your timeline?
Right now? Well, what would happen would be if the legislature approves the contract, then we have to go through the steps to get approval of the terms and conditions of the agreement with various state agencies that we have, Office of General Services, Attorney General, Comptroller, whatnot, and even some internal steps. The next step in the process is that the county makes application to the Federal Aviation Administration for what's called a deed of release. At that point, that's when they do the environmental review, the assessment. There would be some preliminary plans that are done at that submission. Once that gets approved, DOT goes back to FAA with a final design as to where everything is based on the environmental assessment, some of the issues that may come up with FAA or with the community based on the environmental assessment. So it's a very long process.
I guess where I'm coming from is we're in a situation where our responsibility is to the taxpayers and to, you know, certainly we have some that this is really great for and some obviously that this doesn't feel great for and may not be, although we don't know because we don't know the plan. There are very few opportunities for the county to say yes or no about what's going on. The sale of it is one option, obviously, technically. From that point, there can be input by the county as an agency, as an involved agency of the seeker. But outside of that context, that would be the design and its impact, environmental impact, on that particular property without any consideration of any other property at that point. That would be the only opportunity at that point for the county to have a say, if I'm understanding correctly, correct?
And the deed transfer is at the end of that process.
Right, but the deed transfer is inevitable if we already vote on this and say that we're approving it.
Well, there are contingencies in that contract.
And
I'll correct the typo, too, by the way.
So, Jonathan, could you give us a little sense of what those contingencies are in the contract?
Well, the contingencies involve all the approvals, essentially, that it must go through.
So for the legislators here that haven't gone through these processes, what does it mean to be an involved agency, and what privileges or impact or say do we have as an involved agency in a seeker?
An involved agency means that you get notice and opportunity to comment on each phase of the process. It will come back. When we actually transfer the property to actually, you know, you will approve the sale. I believe when it will come back for a final vote, but obviously if you voted and all the contingencies are met, I mean, we're going to want to do a resolution actually transferring the property at that point.
So let me ask one final piece to this. If all of those are met within the environmental review, we are part of it, but they're all met, then there's the final vote on whether, you know, to final vote to transfer. What if there was a moment at that point where the design didn't work for constituents or it wasn't exactly outside of the realm of seeker? Is there still negotiation at that point?
Well, there's always negotiation. I mean, I find it hard to envision that the project is going to be, you know, because it's going to involve us. It's still on you know, property that adjoins us. We're still the adjoining landowner, you know, even after we transfer this. But I am sure that we will work out something that is acceptable to the county as well as to DOT. I mean, we've been working together throughout.
Right. Well, the county as far as the constituents, though, and that's the concern around the table for many people, and that's why I'm asking. I mean, the county is one entity, but the county includes the constituents, so.
Right. But, I mean, the property is owned by Tompkins County, and we have to make a decision as to, you know, as to what's best for all the residents of the county. And obviously the DOT will do its best through the process to eliminate and mitigate any environmental consequences. I don't know what more could be done. I mean, this is absolutely, in my view, the parcel which minimizes the environmental impacts. I should say the other area that we're talking about that Mike mentioned, that with the Cherry Road, that's all in the runway protection zone. It also has the stream running through it. That's not a possible area at all.
Well, I think the buzz, what you said, the most important thing is that everybody around the table needs to vote for all 104,000 constituents. I mean, I understand that. I mean, it's the entire county that we're talking about. I understand. I mean,
right.
It's an important question.
Yeah. And I should say, I mean, it's the county's property. It's always been the county's property. It's been the county's property for, you know, at least 50 years. I forget. But, you know, and there is always intention of doing something with this property.
Mike Lane.
I have a little different take than Mike Sigler, and that is I really appreciate the efforts of New York State DOT. I thank you folks for coming tonight to our meetings, and the speed and and the work that's gone into coming together with this agreement with the county and FAA. We certainly appreciate the fact that after I've been involved with this issue for 15 years at least, and seen actually have come to critical mass with Governor Cuomo announcing that this was going to happen. Finally, we don't need to add more time to this. We're ready to go, and it's time that we made this decision to sell this 15 acres.
I'm going to say a couple things, and I've got Amanda and then Leslin. One is the site downtown. We believe there are significant issues that may need to be cleaned up. So writ large, the county's going to be cleaner as a whole when this is all done. Eric, you said 10 trucks, correct?
I did. I should clarify. I mean, it's 10 plow trucks. That's what we plow with. There are more trucks at that facility, at the current facility, than 10. But there's 10 plow trucks and, four or five medium-duty trucks, a couple pickups.
Okay, maybe 20 trucks altogether.
Less than 20.
Okay. And they are not going to go on to Hillcrest Road, right? The entrance and exit, the access is from Warren, right?
That's right.
So is there any reason any of those trucks would go up or down Hillcrest? Except maybe but they're not, the state doesn't plow Hillcrest.
They do not plow that road. And I'd have to look geographically if that was a shortcut to a location that we were maybe working on a culvert. But it's not going to be on a plow beat. You know, it's not going to be on a plow beat.
So concern about trucks is maybe occasional, you know, if there's some specific repair that's right along that road or right at the end of Hillcrest on Trip Hammer or something. But the normal access is on Warren, which, you know, again, taking big picture, getting directly to Warren compared to 3rd Street and where the trucks have to go through a narrow neighborhood, basically, a neighborhood that where we hope a lot of people will live at some point where the farmer's market is, et cetera. I think the trade-off is seems like a benefit all around. I mean, it's my feeling. So, but anyway, I think seriously, impacts to Hillcrest, I'm having trouble imagining. So the visual impacts for Kennedy Smith, is their name? I can understand that, but the Hillcrest neighbors, I don't quite understand. So Amanda and then Leslie and then Ann.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Mike Ziegler, for all you said. I couldn't agree more, and I couldn't have said it better. You know, if this has been 15 years coming, what's a couple more weeks trying to get more information? And this legislature, not one from 15 years ago, is the one that's voting on it. We're the people who have to make the decision. And once again, you know, maybe I'm out of the loop, but I don't have enough information. And why hasn't there been, you know, or if there's a 106-page document, you know, put somebody in front of me that can explain that, you know, and give me the background and have a planner sitting here who's going to tell me, you know, we looked at this site and this site and this site, and this is why this parcel is the most, the best one. And that's not what I'm getting. So that's, you know, I'm not going to be voting for this. And, you know, Martha, you said a trade-off for the folks who live there. That's their life, you know, and maybe it won't be a big impact, maybe it will, but it's not a trade-off for them. That's their life. And I don't, if it was my backyard, I would be freaking out too. So, thanks.
Leslie and then Ann.
Jonathan, if you will indulge me a little bit, I want to follow up on something Anna was asking. You know, we've had a very good relationship with the DOT. Certainly we work together well. I am interested in finding out, not just generalized, when we get to the point of a resolution for a transfer of deed or whatever it is, is there a place there that we could possibly include in that resolution the county having input with the DOT, working in partnership with the DOT, to make sure that all of the concerns of our residents and of the county are addressed, and not just we just transfer and here you go, it's your problem now. Is there room that something like that can happen? I'm hoping it will, or it could.
Yeah, the way I envision it is that those matters will be resolved before anything comes back to you.
And if they're not resolved, could that be a part of a resolution without muckety-mucking up anything? Could we have something like that? Do you see any legal reason why we can't have a whereas or a resolve or something like that in a resolution that allows for that? I'm thinking back to the old library and some of the things we had in there.
No, so long as it's consistent with the approvals that we have, for example, from the FAA.
Thank you.
And I might add, too, our intention, DOT's intention, is not to keep everybody in the dark all the way through the process. If there are questions or concerns, or once there is a site plan that has been developed based on the environmental information that we gather, we can share that. We can get input. We can continue to work with the neighbors. So it's not like this is the last part of our conversation. I'm sure that the rest of TOD would be willing to hear what everyone has to say and share that information with us. We've been in partnership, as you say, for a very long time.
Yes.
And so going forward, I don't see where any of that communication stops today.
I appreciate that, Kathleen. And I've heard that loud and clear. But I've also heard loud and clear from our neighbors, you know, they're concerned. They want to make sure that their protection's in place for them.
Certainly understood.
As well.
We've got Annie and then Deborah. Is your hand up? Okay.
I had a question, and then I wanted to comment a couple other things. So one question is as far as the for road maintenance, you talked about plowing. Would there also be out of that site road maintenance just in the other seasons?
Yes, it's a full year operation. And okay. During the summer, we do other maintenance type operations out of the Third Street facility, and you know, patching potholes, fixing guide rail, that type of thing, replacing culverts, ditching.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I thought, but I had just heard. I thought you just heard about plowing. Okay, and so I will be voting for this resolution. I struggled with voting for the environmental resolution because nothing to do with your side of the project. I think perhaps somebody or something on our side dropped the ball of not giving us that environmental impact statement to look at that we were, because we get it for everything else. So I just was also kind of shocked that we didn't have it, and if I hadn't asked for it and got it distributed, then you guys or Katrina actually copied it and got distributed. If we hadn't done that, then folks wouldn't have had that. So I was a little disturbed on our side about that, not having that to look at. And as far as voting for it, as far as other sites, with 55 acres and with about a 10 acre area that you're needing, I'm feeling pretty comfortable that there's enough room to put that to really mitigate, you know, as far as I know now, as mitigating that for the neighbors. So I'll be voting for it. So thank you.
Thanks, Annie. Deborah?
I just wanted to say I told Kathleen this personally before the meeting started, but I want to repeat it for everyone here. Mara and her husband contacted me when they found out about this several weeks ago, and they were very upset. And I got in touch with Mike Hall, and Mike got in touch with Kathleen, and she came down and met with Mara and her family and visited her house. And to me, that's a real sign of good faith that DOT will make an effort to accommodate the Kennedy Smiths and the other neighbors as much as they possibly can. And while I understand, I've been to Mara's house. It's a lovely house. I understand why they're upset. But you know, I guess, again, hearkening back to years on the planning board with angry neighbors whose property they perceive will be damaged or compromised in some way by development. In a situation like this, there are always people who feel like they're getting the short end of the stick. And unfortunately, we have to make decisions for the larger community. And so I'm really sorry that I have to say that I'm probably going to vote for this because it has to happen. And I also have every confidence that our planning department and my calls, airport people, looked at every possible solution to where to place state DOT and came up with the best one that they could.
All right. Jason, did you have something to add?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Martha. I'll just add something regarding the SEACR process and the NEPA process. This is a very public process. The information that's found through that review is public information.
We can make sure and make it very studious on our part to ensure that we share that information as it's released with the legislators so you can review it, as well as being able to direct any residents to that information. I will tell you, having gone through this process, not in this region, but with the DOT in general, from the onstart, they've been very much involved, very much on top of trying to understand issues, and will be throughout that process with us and with the constituents. They're interested in ensuring that constituents' concerns are addressed, and meeting multiple times if need be more to ensure that their concerns are met. So I can tell you, just having the minimal contact that I've had so far, it's been very proactive. They will continue to be proactive. We will ensure that they are. And we'll also ensure that any other information through the CECA and NEPA process is released to the legislature so they have the full set of information in front of them.
Okay, anything else? We've got a revised resolution. Jay, are we ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Keep them up if you want them up. 1, 2. Opposed? That passes 9-4. Is that the right number? Yeah, Rich had to step out for an emergency at home. So that passes. Now, we have two more, and I believe these are facilities and infrastructure, projects, N and O. Thank you, Kathleen and Eric. You don't have to leave yet, but we have two more on these. David?
Okay. This is authorizing acceptance of FAA grant to acquire snow removal multitasking equipment at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, and I so move. It's ID number 8066.
Seconded by Leslin. Eric and Kathleen, thank you so very much. Really appreciate your time, and we look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you. I just want to mention, I know Kathleen from when she was on Common Council in the city, Syracuse, and was one of the early signers of Elected Officials to Protect New York, the anti-fracking letter that we got 800-plus local elected officials to sign. And I want to thank you, Kathleen, for your advocacy back then and your continued work on behalf of the citizens. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Have a good drive back. All right. Questions on Resolution N?
Can we get a second on that? I'm not sure.
I think, did I say Leslin?
Yes.
I did. Yes. This is usually where I sleep in the winter.
All right, we're going to have a break soon, guys. Hang in. So, all right, seconded by Leslin. Discussion. More snow removal equipment? Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. You're on a roll of one. Dave, go ahead.
Okay, Resolution O, ID 8067, authorization for acceptance of an FAA grant to install passenger boarding bridge, gate number 1, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport, and I so move.
Thank you. Seconded by Anna. Discussion? Ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That is unanimous. All right, thank you. Now, did we get to all of the joint resolutions? All right, we'll definitely go back to your committee reports. We're good? We're good, Kathy? We got it done? Mike Hall, thank you so very, very much. I know you've been burning the midnight oil and the early morning oil on all of this, and there's just a lot going on, and we are really in your debt for making sure that the I's are getting dotted and the T's crossed. So thank you so much for all your work on this.
Thank you, Martha. There is a lot going on, and it's going to continue, but everybody obviously is paying close attention to what's going on and offering their points of view, and that makes a better decision in the long run. I don't know if I told you before, so I just want to end on a lighter note. We speak your language, we cook your food, and now I've added, we celebrate your music because we are supporting, as the primary presenter, the Syracuse Chamber Orchestra. And in exchange for that support, they agreed to do more youth outreach in our community, and I asked them to start with GIAC, and making sure that young people in the community the final thing, and you're welcome here. So.
Thank you so very much, Mike. We really appreciate it. All right. So that we can revive ourselves a little bit before Jason gets started on our budget. So all those early meetings, guys, we're making up for tonight. So let us break for a 10-minute recess. Please be back in your seats at 4:15. Thank you. I'd like to call us back to order. So where we left off was, I can find my agenda. I am pretty sure we're at the county administrator's report.
Thank you. Thank you, Martha. So today will be a little longer report than in the prior meetings. And I don't want to take up too much time to impede on Jonathan's report. But we're going to talk a little bit. I'm going to give a review of the budget, the recommended budget for 2019. One other item beforehand I just want to bring up. We've talked about it in several meetings in the past. The shared service plan that we adopted, that you adopted last year, is supposed to get some guidance from the state as to how we follow up with that. We have not received that guidance yet. While some of the counties, or most of the counties, have to do their first or their original plan, had to be adopted, I believe, by this week, we, as a county that has already adopted our plan, has to report back on what we've done to follow through. The state has yet to provide guidance to us as to what we have to do to report on that. I know I spoke about it, I think, at the last meeting before. I expected to have something. I did follow up, and they have not sent out those guidelines yet. So we should be receiving that hopefully in the next month or two.
I heard a radio report this morning that the state had authorized, I think, $22 million for the shared services grants.
So we should, or we are eligible for reimbursement of costs related to the plan and items that we might have implemented with the plan. I have not yet seen those guidelines yet, so until we get that direction, but there is money available, so things that we've implemented, we'll be able to recoup some of those costs. So I just wanted to share that with everyone. I guess now we'll talk about, move on to the recommended budget, the 2019 recommended budget. And you know, this is the starting point, I guess, for the budget process. Having gone through this now for the first time since I've been here, I just wanted to thank the department heads and the agencies for enduring what I would call probably more punishment than usual over the past month or month and a half. They've tolerated a lot of questions, a lot of late-night emails and text messages. I've learned the process and couldn't have been more appreciative of their efforts. Mm. Also, I'd like to thank Kevin McGuire. Kevin and I have spent a lot of time together over the past 3 or 4 weeks, some would say more than usual. And it's really because of his hard work that the budget book has come together and really had a good partnership with him over the course of the past month putting this together. So really good hats off to him and thank him for his hard work. So I guess we'll start with the most, you know, what everybody wants to understand or wants to know. We'll start with the bottom line and the end result here. With respect to the budget and what comes of it. The budget has some several stable growth in terms of revenue, particularly sales tax and tax base, and they have a very important impact on this budget, and I'll get into some details as we go through that. We continue with a lot of the work initiatives from last year and prior years, as well as some new ones. ATI, jail population reduction, housing are some of the ones that we continue to focus on moving forward. The tax levy is proposed at, and recommended at increasing by 1.43%. Just a frame of reference, the legislature created a financial goal of 2.2% in May, so we are coming in under that goal. We'll talk a little bit as to why that's the case. It is the fifth consecutive year that your tax rate has gone down, and that's a direct link to the first part of this, which is stable growth in revenues. We are also recommending a $3 increase in the solid waste fee, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. All in all, total impact, if this budget was adopted as proposed, which it probably won't be, it would have about a $15 or $15.40 impact on the average. That should really be median homeowner of a $185,000 home. Some of the economic and fiscal indicators. So as you know, your budget is impacted by the economy. As the economy improves, there are certain drivers that help the budget, and as the economy does not improve or if the economy has a downturn, that also impacts your budget. Several of those factors, I'll go through a few of them. Unemployment continues to be low. In fact, it's at a 10-year low right now. Tompkins County usually trends better than the southern tier in the state, and that continues to hold true this year as of right now. Inflation is our friend right now, or still is a friend. It has not increased to the extent to where you've seen drastic increases in commodity prices. It is up a little bit from this time last year and the time before, but it's still not a huge driving factor in costs. Consumer confidence is up. In fact, this past March, you had a 14-year high in this country with respect to U.S. consumer confidence. This has a direct impact on the amount of money people spend in the community, buying power, which drives sales tax and many other factors in the budget. And the Dow Jones continues to grow. That means people are investing their money. And as the stock market continues to grow, usually fares well for us. This is even after a dip following January. The market is back up to post-January mark points again. So all in all, the economy is positive. And that has an impact on the budget, particularly some of the programmatic indicators of need. So these are some of the indicators that talk about the community. Talks about folks that have been impacted by the recovery, I would say the economic recovery, or not. SNAP cases, which is our food stamp program, generally the caseloads are continuing to decline. They've declined 14% over the past 3 years and are down 4% from the last year. But they're still higher than they were pre-recession January of 2008, which would suggest there was some programmatic changes as a result that have resulted in this, but also some folks are being left behind through the recovery process. TANF, which is family assistance, it's a federally funded program, is down, and the trend is pretty obvious in terms of just if you look at the line graph, about a 14% decline since June of 15. Last year, about a 12% decline from a year ago, and a total of 28% since post-recession. Again, there's no local cost here. There's no local savings, but there is a five-year lifetime eligibility. And generally speaking, after that case, if there's still a need for assistance, they will transfer over. Families will transfer over to Safety Net, which is the state's state and county-funded follow-through with that. In this case, you see a little bit of an opposite situation where your safety net cases remain 24% above to where they were pre-recession. They're down about 1% from this time last year. However, that shift from over the past 10 years is a local funding shift. So it goes from a federally funded program. Folks that may shift from TANF to safety net now go to a 71-29 split where the county is picking up the larger share. This graph kind of shows you some interesting elements. It does show the decrease in TANF, which is family assistance, and it shows the increase in safety net. The numbers aren't on there, but if you look at the actual number of cases in January of 08 to July of 18, the total number of cases hasn't changed. So it's a clear shift from TANF to safety net coverage. And what you're seeing here is then there's more of a local cost representation or a local cost pickup in that shift. But the actual total number of cases is relatively the same. Again, an indicator that some families are being left behind through the recovery, the economic recovery that we've had. Shifting a little bit to major budget drivers. Revenue, we'll talk a little bit about sales tax. I'm going to talk a little bit more about sales tax than in prior years, only because of its impact on the budget and what I would call its impossibility of prediction. We'll talk a little bit more about that tax base. Casino revenue, again, coming back for the second year. Mandates, labor costs, which is the bulk of your budget, and some capital investments. So as a driver, sales tax is roughly 18 to 20% of your revenue. So a ripple in the sales tax has a ripple on the rest of you and the ability to support the rest of your budget on the structural aspect of your budget. One of the challenges we're having over the past several years is that it's not consistent. So it's very difficult to identify trends. Over the past 10 years, you've had about on average a 2% growth per year. On the past 15 years, about 2.5% growth. The exception is that in 2009 we had a decrease, and that was planned and somewhat expected with the recession. In 15 and 16, though, you didn't necessarily expect it, and there wasn't really necessarily an explanation for it. You had similar economic drivers. The economy was doing well. Unemployment was low. You saw growth in different areas. Consumer confidence was up. But you had, for whatever reason, low sales tax collections. And I don't know that to this day we have an understanding as to exactly why that was the case. And then you're followed with 2017, which had a 6.5% growth over, 17 had a 6.5% growth over the prior year. And right now you're trending strong. Rick's sales tax report suggests that, and after discussion, there's nothing to suggest that you won't finish strong this year with a 6% growth over the prior year. So that kind of creates an interesting hot mess of absolutely no consistency throughout anything. So when we talk about budgeting, it's not easy in that sense. It doesn't make it. We like to see nice trend lines. We like to see predictability and consistency. Well, we don't have that right now. So I threw together two options for you, an option of growth and an option of maybe not so much growth. And I would venture to say the actual outcome will be somewhere in between there. First, this just shows you a gap. It shows you a 2018 finish. The dotted line is what would happen if we finished at 16% growth over 17, okay? And you can see that the orange line in the dot is higher than the blue line, blue being your budget. So you have a gap, which is preferably in my line of work, we like to see that orange line above the blue line, not below it, right? That means we've earned more money than we budgeted for. The challenge that comes with this is you like to see those lines closer together versus further away. Generally, we love to see actual just a little bit more than budget. It provides a little bit of cushion. When it starts to spread to this gap, we then have to make decisions about and recommendations about how do we catch up with that gap. Are we putting too much reliance on property taxes and not enough dependence on sales tax? Are we being overly conservative? Balanced with if we're too aggressive, what happens if we overshoot that and now we've got a budget that isn't yet achieved? So there's a balancing act there. What helps make those predictions easier is when you have trending. We don't have trending, so it's a little more challenging. So I put together two scenarios as we begin to analyze this. If we recommend, and what the recommended budget does have, is about a 5.4% increase over the prior year, and that's based off of a series of estimates of actuals. If we increase it 5.4%, and you assume a 2% growth every year thereafter, from 2019, 20, 21, and 22, which is the 2% growth, by the way, is your average over a 10-year period, your budget growth for 20, 21, and 22 will be reasonable, a 5, 4, and 3%, meaning your budget is going to continue to grow to catch up to the actual collections. And as you can see, those lines then become closer together, and they start to fill in that gap. Okay, and that's the goal, is how do we bring those lines together as quickly as we can without creating any drastic measures that we may have to have a course correction on. So in this case, the point of this is if you see typical growth over the next 4 years, your budget will still be positively impacted. You'll still see better than average growth in your budget as you begin to catch up to actual collections. Let's say, for example, though, we don't have the positive outcome in the economy. And let's say, for example, we're still going to budget what we're recommended, which is a 5.4%, because we have no reason right now to assume that there's going to be a huge downturn in the economy. But let's say the day after you do that, we have a downturn in the economy. And let's say that there's no growth in 19 over the prior year, being over 18, and there's actually a decrease in sales tax collections in 20, flat in 21, and then again, you do that. Smart, you know, the growth begins again in 22 because you've dipped out of that downward turn in the economy. Your budget will still have some marginal growth in it over the prior year as you try to bring those lines together. Most importantly is your 2019 budget isn't too aggressive, meaning for 20 you don't have to then go backwards in the budget process. You don't have to reverse or decrease your budgeted number, which then gets into structural problems with your budget. The reason I went through all that evaluation is because you don't have trending right now. We don't have consistency. You had 2 years of a decline in revenue and 2 years followed by potentially 2 years of strong growth. That's not consistent. What we've done here is we're recommending a budget that provides growth with an eye on the unknown. So it's taking some of that. It's balancing what might be a new baseline of revenue for sales tax, but also not trying to rely too much on this 18-month, what I'll call erratic surge in growth, which is what it is. And it allows for a course correction should the economy change. All right, so you're not being overly aggressive. You're not being overly conservative in the process. That's sales tax. That has helped your budget in terms of being able to fund and support the expenditures and the services that you want to provide. The other thing that's helped spread that cost out is growth in your tax base. And they're tied. You've had about a little over a 4% growth in your tax base this last year. The past 3 years, you've had over 12%. The past 10 years, you've had over 22%. That's great tax-based growth. The fact that you have a skyline obscured by cranes is a perfect resemblance of a continuation of this growth. That contributes to being able to spread the cost of government services over a wider tax base. There's also spillover benefits. Generally, when you have that type of growth, you're going to have increased sales tax collection. So there could be a direct correlation to the amount of development that's going on in the county and the growth in your sales tax. Casino revenue, the third revenue that I want to talk about. Last year was the first year you included it in the budget. And looking back at some of the meeting minutes and some of the meeting, the video from that, you know, this was a conservative budget for 2018. You had absolutely no trend to build off of. You are a unique in that you do receive revenue from two different casinos because of where you're located to, in relation to both of them geographically and population-wise. So last year you adopt the budget, you put $1.2 million. A good portion of that went to support a lot of the additional initiatives with alternatives to incarceration and reentry and trying to decrease the jail population. Those are continued into this budget. But in February, all of a sudden, DeLago gets hit with a bond rating decrease, and basically citing that they weren't achieving 40% of the revenues that they expected when they put the bill, when they were going to build the place. So naturally, we start to become speculative as to whether or not those actual receipts are going to come in at a decrease from expected, or is it going to change from the prior years? What's going to happen? Well, you've had, up to date, you've had four out of the eight collections, so you get four payments of revenue. And right now, you're about 15% where you were, 15% above 2017. So there's nothing to suggest right now that it's going to decrease, and there's no real justification for me to propose an increase in it. You simply have 8 months, 9 months under your belt, and it just isn't enough right now to make a change. So what we're recommending is to keep it flat at $1.2 million. That kind of covers the revenue, the big revenue drivers in your budget. Labor costs are a big part of our budget. Right now we have one labor contract out of the four in place, and that's the white-collar unit. That's a lot of your office staff and white-collar employees. That covers about 60% of the workforce. The budget does assume settlements for the other three agreements, and next year we'll be working diligently to try to come to an agreement with those other three units. Labor costs with respect to additions to the budget. This year, there's several additions worth highlighting. And again, we'll talk more about this since these are funded through OTRs later on in the budget process. But an overview of it, a total of about 2.5 FTEs. This is split across three different departments. These are circumstances where the departments have identified an upcoming retirement in the next calendar year, and they are budgeting overlap for an incoming employee to partner and to do a little bit on-job the training and transfer of knowledge before that retiree retires. So it's a good succession plan. If we could do that in all of our instances where we know enough at a time, we try to do that. One and a half FTEs for raise the age. As you know, within less than a month, 16-year-olds will come into play with raise the age legislation, and next October 1st will be 17-year-olds. Probation is budgeting an expectation of needing of 1.5 probation officers. The other half will be in 2020, so it'll be a total of two FTEs over the course of 2 years. This is the only department that has budgeted an increase in staffing, primarily because right now probation is the only department that can have some level of predictability of intake and supervision over what they may receive or may see from Raise the Age. The other departments are standing by to kind of see what type of impact that has. One FTE through a school resource officer, and that's a partnership with TCT BOCES with the Sheriff Department. That's an OTR request. And a half an FTE increase in the department reorganization of emergency response. And we'll talk a little bit more about that at that department review. Lee is going to be retiring next year, and there's going to suggest some reclassification and an increase of a half a staff. To help with some of the initiatives specifically related also to the EMS task force recommendations. Also, labor costs, healthcare premiums are up. I will say that this is a good thing in terms of only being about $500,000 increase in fringe benefits on a 750-person organization. Healthcare premiums are budgeted at a 6% increase. That's significantly lower than what you're seeing across the state. I will say that the consortium has not yet adopted its rates, correct? It's later this month. That will probably be between 4 and 6%. We put a 6% in there based on what we know today with claims, what we are seeing with some future projections, which seem to be hovering around the 6 and 7% in future years. And I would say right now, I think even the state's Empire plan is upwards of 9%, and some insurance plans are upwards of 12% of the year. So you have consistently been lower with respect to premium increases. Unfortunately, generally, it's always a discussion about premium increase. It's never a discussion about premium decrease. So that's why I say $500,000 is pretty good. Pension remains flat. Last week, the comptroller came out with pension rates, which had a negligible change. I think it was 14.9 to 14.6. So we did not budget a decrease in it. Overall, fringes are up, like I said, just a little over $500,000. Total salary and fringes are about 3.4%, roughly $2.2 million. 1.6 of that is local dollars. You'll notice as we get to later on in the slide that that makes up the vast bulk in terms of the increase of local impact spending. Mandates. Mandates, for the fourth consecutive year, you have a decrease in your mandated, your health service mandated expenses. It's not a very big decrease. It's about less than a percent, about $175,000. There's a scattered approach. So there's some increases here and some decreases there. I will say the decrease in child care cost is not a reflection of a decrease in service levels, but actually a reflection in the way we are changing our reimbursement model with certain daycare costs related to foster care cases that may allow us to capture greater revenue. So that's an internal change, again, not a change in service being provided. We'll shift a little bit to capital reinvestment. The county has a policy as part of its capital plan. I'll back up. The capital plan was first adopted in 2006. It was reviewed and updated in 2012 as a result of changes in the economy, and one of our major work items for next year is to review and update it again in 2019. Part of that 2012 was a revision of county policy in that you continue to increase your capital contribution by 0.5% of the prior year's tax levy. That is continued again in this budget. It's roughly an increase of $245,000. The amount of money you levy for that, which is over $6 million in total, goes to support existing debt service for projects as well as some new projects that are being proposed or on the capital plan. And that capital plan is in the budget. Two projects worth noting that are new to the capital plan. One is a proposed renovation for the old jail office building. It's roughly about $2.4 million. We are going to suggest using some reserve funds in addition to the existing capital contribution to help pay for those renovations. And a $200,000 storage building shared between facilities and soil and water. I forgot to mention, I didn't include it. It's actually $140,000 because we were able to get a grant. Soil and Water was able to get a grant through Senator O'Meara's office for another $60,000. So the net cost to us is about $140,000. Those are two of the larger projects that are new on the capital plan. Of course, nothing quite as new as the airport project, which will, for the most part, we'll see most of its construction take place in 2019. So what we did here was a little projecting, and we can talk more about this when I present the capital budget and a little bit more in depth during our budget session. But in looking at that capital contribution in terms of the capital levy over the course of the next, say, 10 years, and assuming you continue that 0.5% levy increase every year, it provides quite a bit of capacity, particularly to support another $21 million worth of debt. Considering you have significant facility needs coming up in the near future. We're talking about sheriff building improvements that could result in some jail facility improvements. It also talks about downtown campus improvements. It can or may include, although not necessarily, I didn't necessarily lump it in anything specific, but it could include improvements to the TCAP facility, which may come up in the discussion over the course of the next few years. And TC3 is going to be engaging in a capital plan review over the course of the next year or two to update their capital investment. The point of this was to see what type of capacity you could continue to support. Capital infrastructure is going to be a continuing need. Your facilities are going to need some investment. And continuing with that capital levy will continue to support that. Again, the reason I did that was just to take a glimpse and to kind of segue into the fact that 2019 will be an important year to review that capital plan, update it, and bring it back to the legislature for consideration later in the year. Sponsored agencies. Sponsored agencies this year did have a 2% increase in the baseline of budgets for all sponsored agencies. I will say also that this group, I should lump in with the department heads, a new set of services that I was not familiar in my prior life. They spent a lot of time with me, and I'm appreciative of their time, explaining what they do, how they do it, and just very professional and committed to what they're doing. So it was really a pleasure working with them. About $500,000 of recommended one-time OTRs for the agencies in the recommended budget. TC3 is flat, and that was a decision that was made collectively with Cortland County. I will say one thing that's not in here, and we just recently received the presentation, and that was the TCAT budget presentation last Wednesday. I did not put the recommendation in this budget for two reasons. One, it just came a few days ago or last Wednesday, and two, we have not been able to link up with our partners at Cornell and the city to understand what their commitment is. I fully expect that there will be more discussion over the next few weeks, and we'll probably have something come either from the floor if there is going to be an ask for next year or future years, but it's just not in this budget right now. Contingency is, per your financial policies, is a fund that's available for unintended expenses or unexpected expenses. Looked a little bit at the past 4 years of your contingency, and your baseline budget has been around $900,000, which is fitting for this size of budget, and generally that has met your need in the past. So we felt no reason to change that baseline. What we did continue is a recommendation for a $300,000 OTR with respect to potential jail board outs. Now, this was created in the first time for this current fiscal year. Remember, you're 9 months past the jail variance being not renewed, I guess, or lifted. So while we are doing well with minimal board outs, I would say you're still in an evaluation period and probably will be for another 24 months. No one can really explain. In fact, I think this is less of an explanation than the sales tax as to why board outs are so low. But right now we're going with it. But we are going to recommend that one-time OTR be put as a separate contingent line in addition to the $900,000 and evaluate that over the course of time. I think this was intended to be a three-year stay, and that should give enough time to evaluate board outs in the jail population. The airport, again, this is a fifth year, what I think was initially intended to be a three-year trial. In enterprise funds, you have the ability to provide and do provide chargebacks or administrative fees to those enterprise funds because those operations are supported solely by the revenues. They are still attached to the rest of the organization, particularly for back office procedures, payroll, procurement, those types of things. So it's not uncommon. In fact, it's encouraged that those enterprise funds pay a share of those administrative fees. As you know, better than I do, several years ago, the airport fund was suffering from some challenges. The legislature at that time decided to pull back those administrative fees, and the general fund ate it versus charging it to the airport fund. Over the past several years, the airport fund has turned around significantly with its finances. So at some point, and my recommendation is probably not until after this capital project is done, we should have a discussion and analysis done about do we slowly integrate those administrative fees back into the airport fund, or do we change them, or do we keep them, permanently keep them out of the airport fund. you know, I now the recommendation is let's evaluate that towards the end of 2019 to next year's budget, 2020 budget. Let's get through this capital project first, which is, you know, a big change. You're talking $25 million capital project. Congratulations, you made the first award tonight for the first phase of three phases. Mike continues to work hard. Thankful for the support of the legislature and Martha's support in having the communication with the federal government and our folks at the White House. We continue to wait. I would expect in the next 2 weeks we'll know if we get some of that year-end money. And Katie continues to work. Our planning department continues to work on NYSERDA and some NYSIG programs to try to capture some other revenue. So we'll have more to come in the next few weeks with respect to trying to fill that gap. Recycling materials and management. So in this year, we have a little bit slight change in the recommended solid waste fee. We have a recommended increase of $3 per unit. That's a $3 per household from $55 to $58. This is primarily due to the worst of situations with respect to increasing expenses and decreasing revenues. So, and I'll get a little bit into that. What this also says is that 2020 pre-planning and some pre-budget work needs to start at the beginning of 2019, and that involves program review and budget projections. So this is a little bit of a busy slide, but I think it shares some information that I think is valuable. From the revenue side of things, if you look at the graph, the orange line graph is your actual revenues over the past 7 or 8 years. And as you can see, it hit a peak in 2013 and started to decline steadily. And then it had another spike in 17. But if you look at the 18 and 19 projections, it's almost as if that trend line was continuing to go downward with the exception of 2017. Your blue line is where you budgeted. And as you can see, you started to make some corrections following 15 and 16 and into 17. And then following that big spike, we increased the budget. Unfortunately, that spike in 17 doesn't seem to be sustainable. There seems to be some serious issues on the international market with commodities, and to a certain extent, it's fallen off. The floor has fallen out from it. So that shows the revenue decline. The expense are the bar graphs behind it. And as you can see, you had a spike in 2018. That is the year you rebid the recycling collection. So collection is when they go and pick it up at the houses and at the residences and so on and forth. That had about a $500,000 spike in collection for the current year. That continues into 2019. The point I want to draw your attention to is if you look at 2013, your actual revenue covers a vast majority of your expense. Now look at that in 2019. Your revenue hardly covers any of your expense. That's the perfect storm situation. So you've got decreased revenues and increased expenses. For the most part, the rest of the $6.5 million budget remains unchanged. But in this case, you have about a $950,000 to $1 million variance over a two-year period of time. That's part of the reason for the $3 increase in the solid waste fee. Next year, I think, and as I say next year, I say at the beginning of 2019, Barb and I have had a lot of discussion about this. This will be a major initiative for us to get into and to understand how do we prevent a larger fee increase for 2020. Are there programmatic changes that need to happen and what's going on with revenues and expenses in this case? Unfortunately, the expenses are contractual and the revenue is dictated by a market that you don't have control over. So this is going to be a work item for next year, but I think the important element is you look at 13, it kind of gives you a proportion to 19 with respect to those revenues and those collection costs. This just gives you a little bit of a show. You haven't really increased the fee very much, just to show you what we're proposing with relation to where the fee is and where it's been the past few years. And again, we'll continue to review this at the beginning of next year. Over-target requests. So over-target requests, I will admit, being new to this budget process is different, but it works well for Tompkins County, which is good to see. OTRs, or over-target requests, work in two functions. A target OTR, which really has to do with the baseline budget, a permanent increase in the baseline budget. A one-time has to do with usually a project or a short-term initiative, not increasing the baseline of the budget. Targets are generally funded through tax levy or other revenues, and one-times are usually funded through fund balance or reserves, not to be reoccurring. In this case, there were roughly about a little under 2.4 million of requests that came in. I will say that was a little on the low side compared to some years, particularly on the target side. What was recommended was just shy of it, and I'll get into a few details, not too much. You'll have plenty of time to get into those, and there's plenty more to talk about as we get into different individual departments. Most of the recommended budget includes OTRs that were one time, and there was about 300,000 versus of target OTRs. I'll get into a few of them, and like I said, I'll kind of skim over this as we'll have plenty more time to talk about it as we get into the budget workshops. Some of the target increases, again, doer with the retirement of our current director coming, some reorganization, reclassification of positions, as well as complementing and trying to take on some of the EMS task force initiatives are some of the reason for target increases in DOER. Human resources, you're taking a one-time OTR, making it permanent with that three-quarter employee, as well as throwing some more support behind recruitment and talent acquisition. Probation, this is, again, an investment in electronic monitoring. We've had a lot of success with electronic monitoring as part of a diversion for folks and putting them in jail, and we continue to have that success, and Pat's done a great job, her and her team, in managing that. Two increases with the public library for needs. One has to do with just a general target increase. The other has to do with some replacement of IT infrastructure. And the last is youth services, which is reverting back to some funding that was cut several years ago with respect to supporting recreation. Vehicle replacements, we make a strong effort with vehicle replacements. I will note that we're making, a decent effort trying to replace some of the fleet with electric vehicles. So there's about 8 vehicles proposed being replaced. Organizational performance pieces, I will say, we continue with performance measurement program, and there's actually for the first time a tab in the budget under appendices D or tab D that gives a little bit of an overview of the performance measurement and management program. I know, Mike Sigler, you had a question last year with respect to ATIs and how do we measure those successes. So there's a section of that in that tab D that talks a little bit on how we're starting to measure those successes. It will take some time to develop it, but it's a good question, and I think how do we find quality measurements to know if we're being successful in it. Also, we're proposing moving the Office of Human Rights to the Human Service Annex. That's that additional space off of the Office for the Aging. It's a good, decent, I think, 1,200, 1,300 square feet, an OTR to help outfit that space. It'll make the space ADA accessible. Also be able to put a community conference room in there and some other office space. Housing, we continue with some of the housing initiatives. One new initiative is creating a fund, essentially a matching fund, for communities, municipalities to apply for, to support consultants, studies that will further and look at investment in affordable housing initiatives. And that'll be managed out of our planning department. And again, we continue some of the jail, ATI, and reentry initiatives, continuing College State Upstate initiative upstate, continuing with the CJC position, and there's a new proposed case manager through OAR to assist with the Endeavor House and some of the parolee management that they have. Workforce, these are all one-time initiatives. One that's new that may catch you by surprise is Stop DWI. So Stop DWI is revenue that's generated through DWIs, and in the past it's funded a full position out of my office, and then that's the Stop DWI coordinator, and then a partial positions in the DA's office. Well, revenue has drastically dropped off over the past several years, and that's statewide, and there's some series of concerns about that. One of the initiatives for 2019 will get the Stop DWI committee together as well as some staff and understand exactly why that's happening, and there's some competing factors to it, but in this case, the revenue can no longer support those two portions of DA positions. So there's a 0.8 and a 0.2 of position. In this case, we're proposing that for the time being it be supported by the general fund until we understand what's going on with the Stop DWI program, why are the revenues down, and how do we move forward with it. So that's one of the newer changes to that. And then other agency requests. One consistent with what we've done with our own buildings is rural libraries, outfitting their libraries with AEDs and Narcon kits. And there's a series of other. There's many others there that you'll have plenty of time to get into some more detail. And the ones that I've recommended, I'd be happy to share my recommendations as why I thought they were valuable and why they should be funded. Some have changed from what was originally proposed, and the few that we didn't recommend, I'd be happy to talk about why I did not recommend them or some of the concerns we had. All in all, total OTRs versus recommended, total it came in just about 50,000 under what was requested, to kind of give you a comparison. Some of the risks. There are risks in the budget, and it's important to bring them out just so we are all aware of them as you go to make decisions. Solid waste fee, again, I call that a risk because there's some unknowns there, and we have some work to do next year is to understand what are we going to do moving forward, and there may be some programmatic changes that may be proposed if that's a necessity. Sales tax, again. I put sales tax and jail costs almost together in terms of unknowns. You know, there isn't a necessarily explainable trend with them. We continue to observe them, and we're going to continue to watch to see what happens. And they could go in either direction to help us or to hinder us. And then raise the age. You know, raise the age right now has two budgets that have changes due to raise the age. The probation, which I already talked about, the increase in the 1.5 positions. And DSS. DSS has funding put in there for detention because they're responsible for detention costs of youth. However, it's a net zero impact right now because the expectation is that will be reimbursed 100% by the state. Now, I say that, and I'll say that with caution. That is a little easier to understand than the way and the messages we're getting about the staffing reimbursements with respect to probation. So while the cost may be reimbursed 100%, what or how the cost is determined, I think, is yet up for discussion. What we're getting back from the state now is that cost may be determined by number of youth in contact or number of youth contacts we have. Put it another way, there's a certain overhead that it takes to manage whether it's 10 youth or 20 youth. I'm using round numbers. Whether it's 10 youth, you still need the same amount of overhead for 20 youth. Well, the state may not look at it from that perspective. They may reimburse based on the number of youth. So that element isn't quite sure on what the impact is. So we did not budget any reimbursement for the staffing portion of Raise the Age in the budget, just so you know that. You will notice there is a jump, a little higher than normal jump, in the actual total expenditures, and that is because there is a Raise the Age detention component that has a net impact on your budget but does increase the overall size. So tax cap formula, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I do want to remind everybody that the tax cap formula is relatively easy to understand and calculate, and we just wanted to refresh everybody's memory of that. A simple algebra, a little addition, a little subtraction, a little multiplication. Well, in fact, this year it is more complicated. If it wasn't complicated enough, we made it a little bit more complicated.
That was it?
I'm trying to word this in a way that doesn't put everybody to sleep. I've only got about half a year. Under normal circumstances, and I'll use the word normal, under normal circumstances, your tax cap would be about 4.78%. Normal. This is not a normal year. There are some unusual circumstances, and that's primarily with the town of Dryden. They have decided to opt in, or however you want to call it, opt out. They are deciding not to take sales tax as a revenue to put into their budget. They have requested that it be applied as a sales tax credit against the county tax rate for town residents. A lot of other towns do the same thing. They have an option. They can either take the cash and put it in their budget, or they can say, no, county, hold on to it and use it as a credit against the county tax rate in the town of Dryden. What that does is it lowers the county tax rate in the town of Dryden. It increases the town tax rate in the town of Dryden. The reason for that is they gain additional revenue because the state pays for state-owned land in the town of Dryden for town and school taxes. So there's some revenue gain there. The net impact to the resident is a decrease in taxes, but our tax rate goes down and their tax rate goes up. So that's a good thing, is the net decrease, other than like one property owner. I think there's just one, and I don't remember the circumstances around it. But for the most part, all residents should benefit from that change. However, that increase in sales tax credit, the net increase in credit for next year over this year, is added to our tax cap. So our tax cap next year is actually 9.76%. It's about a $4.9 million, is that what it was? $4.8 million increase if you wanted to ever achieve that. This will go back to normal the following year. But because that tax credit is first this year, you benefit, so to speak, from the net difference between next year's credits and this year's credits.
Are there any other towns we can get to?
I
I tried to explain this as simply as I could. I hope it was, I don't want to spend too much time onto it, but so when you see that tax credit, that tax cap increase, it's because of the sales tax credit that happened with Town and Drive.
And they're only going to do it for 1 year?
It's only 1 year. Next year it'll be back to quote unquote normal, not normal numbers.
No, because it's built into the formula from then on.
It is.
It's only a change in this year. Now, this doesn't, we don't get sort of credit for that.
Rollover.
Rollover?
Yeah. So you get to roll over the difference that you don't use, except there's a cap on that. So you don't get to roll over $4 million into next year. You only get to roll over about $750,000 or so, $700,000.
But don't we keep getting that? Would it roll over infinitely in case we needed it in 3 years?
The rollover calculation is redone every year. And after, in 2020, when that credit is now put into the formula at the beginning of the formula and then taken out at the end of the formula, you won't have this big jump anymore. It's easier.
You will still have the credit.
You will still have the credit. But remember, the credit is recalculated every year based on the new levy number.
So it's only good for 2020?
2019. Yeah. And then that rollover from 2019 will be in 2020. Yeah. So it's about a $700,000 rollover, not a $4 million.
Well, but we have, so look at the first line up there.
Yep. Your tax cap this year is $2.4 million. It's a 4.78%. The proposed levy is 1.43% or $700,000. So you will have, you won't even get all of that difference rolled over.
That's what I was going to ask. So because that's a very high, that's a really high cap.
What contributed to that cap? And that's about more than a percent more than what we put in the budget retreat. A big driver of that is new lumber, and a big driver of that is inflation. So a little recap here. The approach, 1.43% tax levy increase. That's under the financial goal of 2.2 that you set in May. It is under the tax cap. I'll let you pick whatever cap you want to pick on that one, but it's under it. It's under the 9.78%. It supports current operations. It supports a 2% increase in agencies. It supports capital investment. And it captures what I call sales tax growth with caution. Total dollars, as you can see, the 19 budget was a little bit higher than the 18 budget, about $4.7 million, about a 2.6% increase. Local impact is about $1.8 million. Again, the big portion of that would be wages and fringes for about a 2% change in local impact. And actual tax levy goes up about $700,000, about 1.43%. Tax rate goes down. Tax rate goes down 18 cents. It goes down big part because of your growth in taxable assessed value. It's distributing over a greater base. So put that in layman's terms. If your assessed value did not change, you will pay less county taxes. Okay. A little bit of math here. Typical median house or median property of $185,000. With that tax rate over the 18 is about a $12 increase in the levy. Add in the $3 solid waste fee, and you're about $15.40 for the homeowner of a median house of $185,000. And that's the. This is a place for you to start. I mean, this is where you start the budget process. It definitely is not where you'll probably finish, but it's a bit of 30,000 foot level review of the budget.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jason and Kevin and department heads and agency heads. I got you, Mike. And agency heads. And congratulations on your first. And we really appreciate this clear explanation. A little tip. The three-hole punch is my friend during this season. I will punch holes in this and add it to our other friend, the budget book. You know, we have drawers over there. If you haven't found your drawer yet, you can leave it in the box there if you don't want to schlep it back and forth. But I promise you should be doing your homework and you might need carrying back and forth. But there's also the, nine-page budget message.
Yes.
That you had. It's in the front of your books.
It is, yep.
And Jason emailed to us all today this budget message as well as the PowerPoint slides. And so you have that all in your inboxes, too. So this is, as you said, the place to start. So I've got Mike, Anne, and Deborah is who I think I saw.
I would just start with a caveat, and that is we've got a lot of EBC meetings coming up. And you're going to have an opportunity to delve into all of these things that Jason's just described in more depth as they come along. So I hope we don't have to reinvent the wheel by a zillion questions for Jason tonight.
Anne.
Two questions. One was... I'm just wondering why, thank you for the presentation and all the work you guys have done. And so my two questions for TCAT, just wondering, are you considering putting a placeholder in?
I didn't. There's capacity, obviously, to come in under your target still. And to be honest, the discussions I've had with TCAT and the discussions I have with our partners doesn't necessarily coincide with a consistent request right now. So not knowing exactly what they're going to be asking, I know we had the budget meeting on Wednesday. That may change what their request was. So I felt it best just not to put anything right there. You have capacity in under your fiscal goal if you want to consider it. I know in the past sometimes those requests have come from the floor as well. So I'm not supporting anything. It just didn't seem to have – we didn't have a conclusion. I know they got off to a little later start this year, so I kind of fully expected that we'll have more dialogue over the next few weeks with them and then probably have something come back either during their presentation in front of the legislature or sometime in between then there.
Thank you. And my second question is so the average or the median increase in the taxes, $15 or
yes.
Something you said – so does that include the rise in assessment, the average rise in assessment, just to give people more transparency to say, hey, if my house was worth 190, but the assessment was 190, if it went up to 200, does that include the rise in assessment or just the rise?
The thing we've done is last year your median house was about 178,000, so this is more, 185,000. So that would account for some increase. I would have to go back and calculate last year's tax rate on a $178,000 home to give you the difference between the two. All I'm doing is giving you a snapshot of if it was $185,000 home, what that increase in proposed levy and then what that decrease in tax rate would have over a prior year.
But that's not actually then telling somebody about approximately what their rate would be, not accounting for.
We would have to take, because everybody's assessment could change differently. Some people may not have changes in assessment. Some may go up, some may go down. So for me to do that, it'd be helpful. If there's a specific property, we could do it that way. Or we would have to make some generalizations about typical homes, this size, that, you know, it's a hard thing to predict unless it's an individual case.
Right. That's the question I often get whenever I talk to somebody about taxes. They're like, well, but plus my assessment. So
if your assessment goes up, then there would be somewhat of a negating factor to it, but we'd have to know what that is.
Just wondering if we can get like a average or a number, like what's the average assessment, just so we can tell people real numbers, like what's the average assessment that's going up over the years. That's not
I mean, Jason, you said the median home went from 178 to 185. Now, I mean, we have 50,000 properties or something, right?
I mean, generally that's how we would measure it, is the median home value is this. This is the tax rate. This is the change over the prior year to this year. So, I mean, that's generally the way you measure it. And if there is work around your question, depending on revaluations, depending on what areas of the county, you know, are having revaluations, some areas may have increases in assessment in odd years or even years. So it's hard to lump it all into one. It would be easier if there's a specific set of properties or in general. I think the general statement is if your assessment stayed the same as it was last year and the tax rate goes down, you're going to pay less taxes. If your assessment goes up, you may pay the same amount if the tax rate goes down. That's a generalization of it.
Okay.
Right. And that's just county tax rate, not your whole tax bill. Another thing to keep in mind.
Deborah, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, but I don't know now if Mike's going to let me ask my question.
I will.
Well, I mean, I'm really impressed. This is like, this reminds me of a joke I saw on the internet about, you know, a teacher asked how we knew that the Romans were a really brilliant and advanced civilization in this. And this kid wrote, well, they had to be smart because they spoke Latin. Never mind. But anyway, so one thing I don't understand. So we add 0.5% to our levy.
To your capital, the amount you levy for capital, you commit to
right.
capital.
All right, so that eats up 0.5% of our tax cap every.
It's the equivalent to your, it's 0.5% of your prior year's tax levy that you add to the capital contribution.
So you don't increase the levy, you just add, the amount that you're putting aside is based on the increase.
Prior year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So why, if sales tax is so unpredictable, when we have years that sales tax substantially exceeds our budget, why don't we just put that excess aside for capital and we could use our levy for something else?
That is a good perspective and a good point, which is a good reason why I'm proposing we review the 2019 the capital plan. So there's a mix, and not to get into too much detail, there's several approaches when you look at capital investments. Number one, you want to try to continue to invest in your capital needs. So having a steady investment is an important component of that. You want to know to the best of your ability what your long-term debt may or may not be, so you can plan for that amount of capital contribution. The ability and where you have fund balance, which is essentially what I would call that additional revenue above what was budgeted, that one-time revenue. That's your opportunity to possibly say we need to do additional capital improvements. We need to, or we can minimize the amount of debt we can take on so we can pay some cash for capital versus bonding everything. All of that is kind of part of the discussion. And I think that's why, you know, we've talked about updating the capital plan. That's a big part of what does that financial outlay look? Is there a use of fund balance or reserves? Do you continue to have that level of investment, you know, from the levy, the capital investment on a regular basis? And based off of what are you making those decisions? And that has to do with future projects and future debt. The reason I've stressed it so much over the past several months is you have quite a few facilities that are up, I would say, for consideration, other than the old jail, the sheriff's building. You've got the possible, you know, the current jail and improvements to that facility. I mentioned TCAT. There is possibly some contribution out there at some point. TC3 is something that's out there that you'll have a share in. So all of these are capital infrastructure needs, not to mention a continuation of your roads and bridge commitment, which increases in about 3 or 4 years from 1.8, I think, to 2.2.
So our rainy day is here.
I don't want to say the winter's coming, but the point I'm trying to make is that you're in a position to continue that progressive and I would say very proactive planning piece that a lot of people just kick that can down the road. You're in a position to make good investments. And I think you've got enough change over the past few years that 2019 is a good time to recalibrate that, focus a little bit more. You're going to have a discussion, you know, in the upcoming months about the sheriff's building and the jail building. That's right on the forefront. So it's a good time to revisit the capital plan and what's that investment look like? What are we committed to doing? And do we continue it? And what type of capacity we want to build because we know it's coming? Short answer.
Thank you.
I got Henry and Leslie, but I want to add to that first. I mean, as we keep hearing, sales tax is relatively volatile. We can't.
Yeah.
You don't want to sort of plan on that, but it looked like your slide that showed, and I know y'all can see that the slide with the little bump for 2019. That's where you're using some of that cash, some of those reserves, to pay for something straight up. When we first passed the 20-year capital plan, it really was a statement that said, we know we have this responsibility forever, and we're going to just build this in. We're not going to have it be a political football every single year. Not to say we can't adjust it up or down, but we're going to set as kind of default that this is going to be an investment every year we get it. So I think it's worked out well for us, and that we definitely have adjusted it. And there have been a number of times when we, for example, said, okay, we're going to pay for these projects in cash, and it really helps us out in different ways. But it's part of the management. Henry and then Leslin.
Jonathan, you mentioned during our new Leslie training that you were going to do more on performance basis. So does this budget reflect a lot of that?
So the talking about performance measurements and, right, and so on and so forth. So I will say that, and I don't know why, this could be speculation, there were fewer OTRs this year. And I don't know if that was because I talked to the departments and agencies and said, you know, I want some due diligence with the proposals and some explanation as to what does success look like with those, meaning what are the performance measurements? If we're going to fund an OTR, how do we know we've achieved success, whether it's one time or whether it's a target? And I think that that is going to and will continue to be built into the decisions that we make when we bring things forward. Performance measurements right now, you're into your first year of collecting data. Right. So that appendix, or that tab D, talks a little bit of the data we've collected. We should have a lot more to it by the end of this calendar year, and as we go into next year and future years, we're going to bring in more departments. So to say that there are specific decisions here based on performance measurements, not necessarily, but we are continuing to build that so that we have the ability to measure success with departments. What are those performance indicators that say we're meeting our customers' need or that we're a high-performing department? You know, I think I've shared this story with you before. I got into performance measurements, I don't know, six, seven years ago, when I asked the question to one of my department heads, how do you know you're doing a good job? And the response was, well, we don't get a lot of complaints. And I said, that doesn't quite do it for me. So that's how we how are we measuring success? What does a good X fill in the department unit look like? And that is something that will continue to be developed. So is there a specific recommendation here tied to it? No, not yet. But we continue to develop the performance measurement program, and there will be.
Leslie?
Enjoyed a honeymoon while it lasts. The OTR honeymoon, that is.
Yes.
You know, just to add a little bit to what Martha said, we when I came on this legislature, there were so many properties and so much we had that were in deferred maintenance. And it was problematic because we had no monies to fix anything. And this was probably one of the wisest decisions that we made to have a capital reserve. I want to talk a little bit about TCAT real quickly. I hear you that you've had some conversations, but I know often our partners look to see what the county is doing first before they decide what they're going to do. I'm glad to hear conversations have happened because I think TCAT can use support. And I'm hoping that it's not the end of the conversation.
No, not at all.
That they will be okay, thank you.
Yep.
That's all I wanted to.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Anna.
You mentioned something, and I didn't catch it, so I'm asking you to repeat it, about why we saw the reduction in the child care costs because of the change in reimbursement. Could you?
Yes. Yep. And Kit and Tom will be able to explain this better in the individual departments, but essentially what has happened is there are certain daycare costs related to foster care cases. And the current method of the prior method of reimbursement was through foster care channels. And they're changing certain cases based on certain circumstances through daycare channels, which opens up another pot of money to seek greater reimbursement. It also triggers a mechanism, and again, Tom will be able to explain it better, that as you spend more, you open yourself up to more reimbursement in future years through one of the state channels.
So it's state money, not federal money, and it's not paid for by individuals?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
And I know they'll be able to explain in much more detail than I can, but yes.
Henry.
And will you also update it with the detox center? Update the budget with the gluten. I mean,
that's one of those capital costs that isn't quite accounted for. Yeah, you could throw that in there, I guess. I didn't include it. There's nothing in the budget for that. Yes.
Right.
I have a question about You showed us the that our target in April was 2.2%,
mm-hmm.
and you're recommending 1.43%.
Yes.
So that leaves like 0.77%. If we were to sort of allow ourselves to go to our target, mm-hmm. that's 0.75%. So how many dollars is 1% on the levy?
493,000.
So. 493. Okay. So if we felt, okay, there's some things in here that we would like to add in, some maybe not even in OTRs, not even requested by departments. What we're talking about is some might see it as an allowance that would give us flexibility to spend on some priorities that aren't in your budget. So of approximately 400,000 would get us to at what our target was in April. Okay, that's if it's target. If it's one-time funding, it doesn't actually count on that. Okay. All right. Appreciate that very much. And are we going to get those, you know, those big spreadsheets with all the OTRs? Okay.
So
fantastic.
Two things I should probably add is we will have something for you on Thursday, a spreadsheet of all the OTRs for sure. And we'll have something out to you so you can see what was recommended, what was requested. There are a few that weren't requested but I'm recommending for a variety of reasons, or there's some changes of ones that were originally requested.
Okay. Anything else? So on Thursday, September 6th, and this is in the front of your budget, front of your book, we will hear from the county clerk, history center, transportation planning, et cetera, and they're all listed there for each day. So that's your homework. All right. Anything else? Anne.
This might have been said before. Is this the budget, this document going to be online, or is it online?
I believe it is or will be. Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
And if at the end of November we can't agree and get 8 votes on something as a revision, this becomes the 2019 budget. Okay. All right. Thank you so very much, Jason.
Thank you.
All right. And everybody who contributed to it. Very, very well done and a great start for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kathy, do you want to put the screens back up? Okay. All right. Jonathan Wood, do you have enough? We can do your report while the screens are going up, right?
Yeah. No report.
Yes. Okay.
Or should I wait till the screens go up?
I didn't hear you, Jonathan.
My turn?
I have such a great memory, I can repeat Jonathan's entire report. No report. Finance Director Rick Snyder.
I have no report.
Okay. do we have resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Mike Lane.
I have two. I'd like to move Resolution K, Resolution in recognition of the 50th anniversary of the founding of Tompkins-Cortland Community College, to be added to the agenda.
Seconded by Anna. All in favor of adding that? Any opposed? That's unanimous. And?
And Resolution L, resolution congratulating Arinthia T. Montague, Ph.D., on her inauguration as the 4th president of Tompkins-Cortland Community College.
Seconded by Anna Corman. All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Anything else, anyone? On the consent agenda, I will read them, and if you've got any anything to pull off, please just let us know. Resolution A, negative declaration for authorizing Community Housing Development Fund, award for Milton Meadows Apartments, ID 8018. Resolution B, authorizing disbursement of the County Housing Development Fund, award for Milton Meadows, ID 8022. Resolution C, budget adjustment at Cougar Lake Blue Way Trail, ID 8028. Resolution D, making a negative declaration of environmental significance in relation to resolution number blank of 2018, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the Lindsay Parsons Wetland Buffer Project, Waterman Tract, ID 8036. Resolution E, appropriating funds from the Tompkins County Natural Infrastructure Capital Program for the Lindsay Parsons Wetland Buffer Project, Waterman Tract, ID 8033. Can I get a motion on? Yes.
Sorry. Can I have resolution A and B please?
A and B. I don't see why not, right? After the fact. Okay. We do that. Okay. So with that, motion on the consent agenda, moved by Rich, seconded by Anna. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. All right. Leslie McBean Clairvoyant, Chair of Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
I can't remember what all about. It was important. I'm trying to remember in all sincerity.
Oh, I've been there, honey. I know what you're doing. I know how it feels.
I know we had a conversation about the climate survey and next steps, what will happen next. We had a very good conversation with our HR department with regard to employee recognition and retention and some of the action steps that are taken as part of making sure that our employees understand their value within the organization. We shared a little bit of a report on the work we've been doing with advisement from Jonathan and Amy Guerreri around LGBTQ plus issues and our law enforcement, particularly within the jail, and we're continuing, that subcommittee will continue to do more work. And
Kathy Slota.
Pardon me?
Kathy Slota talked about.
Oh, thank you. And the bigger part of our discussion several months ago, as a matter of fact, we had engaged Kathy Schnoller and the Human Services Coalition to talk with us about how they are assessing the agencies that get funding from the county relative to what they're doing in terms of diversity and inclusion. Are they asking questions? How do we know that what we value as a county, these agencies that are receiving county dollars, are also doing similar work? We got a wonderful report from them. They did a survey around board membership of those agencies and employment and training. Of the 16 agencies, I think 14 responded. Among those numbers, several of them indicated a need for assistance in developing their diversity and inclusion plans, and we'll talk more about that and how they get that assistance. Several mentioned having, I think about six or so mentioned having plans, but still could use some work and how they put those plans to work for them and how do they measure success of those plans. Go ahead and add, Anna.
Oh, just some of the plans were written 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And they needed updating, and the implementation of them was where they were finding the greatest need for work.
Right. So that conversation will continue with our Human Services Coalition, because we do want the agencies that we fund to take seriously what we take seriously and our diversity statement and our diversity policy as well. And so we'll continue that conversation with the Human Services Coalition on how to help those agencies come up to speed with what they're doing, and as well as and encouraging others to keep doing what they're doing, because some of them are doing things that are well. So that was the gist of our discussion at Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Did I miss anything? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie. Any questions? All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Housing Committee, I thought I had the consent agenda, but we'll go back to this. But first I wanted to bring your attention to an article in the Ithaca Times, August 22nd to 28th. With vacancies rising, is the student rental market flattening or flatlining? Together with front page on the Ithaca Journal, I think, Mike, you pointed this to us also. Buying in Tompkins County is getting harder. I have really started to try to make sure people are thinking hard about home ownership opportunities. In fact, I met a new neighbor in the Ellis Hollow area the other day. They had just moved into one of the sort of tiny homes, not that tiny, but okay, moderate size, small size home. And they'd moved from the city because they were not able to buy anything in the city. So they're now in the town of Dryden. So I'm trying to educate the city about that, actually, and it's an interesting process. Okay, we have Resolution A that was pulled. Negative declaration, Mike Sigler. Best if you, as vice chair, rather than it come from me, best if you move A and B.
I'd like to move A and B.
Well, you probably should do one at a time and read the titles.
Nice try, Mike.
You should have yellow sheets in your red folder.
All right. Negative declaration for authorizing Community Housing Development Fund award for Milton Meadows Apartment. That is Resolution A. I would like to move that.
Seconded by Deborah. Discussion. Leslin?
Yes. I'm trying to find my resolution because I wrote all over it. No, you're not the only one. My things are all out of order at this point.
Why are you working on that? This is in the town of Lansing.
Thank you. I think what I was looking at is on page 6. There's something that came from the Department of Planning and Sustainability, mm-hmm. and I was trying to understand the recommended vote portion of it, just so that I am clear.
On the funding, you mean?
On the funding that's written up on this thing. So I thought the housing fund, there were equal shares that came from the three organizations.
So what happens is there are the Cornell University puts in $200,000 a year, the county puts in $100,000 a year, and the city puts in $100,000 a year. That's the pot we have to work with.
Right.
For each project that gets approved, we evaluate the projects based on, and I'm chair of the Program Oversight Committee, mm-hmm. so we evaluate the projects based on their merits, and if there's a majority of support, we say, great, okay, now who pays for it? And then we go through the criteria. For example, the city can only pay for projects in the city, can only support projects in the city. Cornell has established its own criteria to say it can only it will only fund projects that it deems relevant to the Cornell community. I will say they've been extremely generous with that definition, and there are very few projects where they won't support. The county can support anything in the county with the stipulation that it has to have for incomes of 80% of area median income or less. So, for example, we funded part of 210 Hancock, but not the 120% AMI units. But there were enough 80 or lower that the county's portion was okay. So you want to know, okay, how come these two odd numbers?
Yes.
Okay. When we got to that moment of saying, okay, now who pays for it, we look at how much, we have a long spreadsheet, how much is left in each bucket, how much county money is left, how much Cornell, how much city. The original request was $300,000. The fund as a whole, well, you have to take the city out because this is in
right.
Lansing, okay? Between the city and the county, between the county and Cornell, the whole was, I think, this might have been the entire amount that was left, 256,000, and the county only had 23,000 and change at all left in this funding round. So Cornell, so we said we'll put in our whole whopping 23,000, and Cornell agreed to pay the rest out of what they had left.
So the total in that fund that's remaining for this year would be the full 256,000 is what you're saying, not including the city, and of that, all of it is being paid to this one project.
Yeah, I'm not sure that part of it is true, that the total of is only 256, because there was another one. We also, at the time, approved something on Seneca Street, and in some cases, we will hold something back knowing something is coming. There was, for example, Lakeview, we had supported. They didn't get their tax credit application, but they're coming back again, so we wanted to hold that money.
Okay, sometimes thank you. So that was the main reason for me to pull both of these, is I wondered if there were other projects that had been discussed for funding and what's happening with them. So I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Ready to vote then? Is there any other discussion on Milton, on this, on Milton Meadows? Okay. All in favor, Resolution A? Any opposed? All right. That's unanimous. Mike, you want to take B?
Yes.
Packet page 43.
Of course, I do not have that.
You don't have the yellow sheet?
No. Wait.
That's why they make it yellow, Mike, so it's easy to find.
Resolution B, number B. Which makes no sense. But anyway, authorizing disbursement of the Community Housing Development Fund Award for Milton Meadows. I move this.
Seconded by Deborah. Leslin.
And I am, based on what you said, Martha, I am assuming that the only part of this that's being funded is the part that LMI housing portion of it. Is that correct? I'm assuming that this project presented that is going to have this many units of LMI housing, and that's what we're funding.
Yes, and in fact, it was revised. Anna or Ann, help me remember, I think it was revised that now all the units will be lower LMI, lower to moderate income. There was going to be a sort of moderate, mid-level income, but it's been revised. So all 72 are 80% or less.
Fantastic. Thank you for that information.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor of B? Ms. Rajan. Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. The Housing Committee will next meet on, I wrote it somewhere, September 17th at 3 o'clock in this room. Thank you very much. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting tomorrow here at 3 o'clock. We anticipate having a late-arriving resolution regarding the joint study that the county will be doing with the city on the possibility of co-locating a road patrol civil division with the city police department. Obviously, this is only at the study level, but we're going to be looking in a more formal manner at that possibility. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. We also will be talking about the jail, and I don't mean to be alarmist, because it seems like people have responded to this, that there's something very different going on than we considered last year, and certainly as was developed in the CGR consultant study. And to be clear, there is no plan to add capacity or beds at the jail greater than what we have now. What we're looking at is we have a building that was built in 1986. It's occupied 24/7 all year, and it gets very hard use. And what we learned in the course of really looking at our jail through the CGR study and on our own through the jail study committee is that the building is in need of real upgrades. And there are reasons to do this, obviously, for efficiency of the building and for good operation. But there's also the element that there are people that are living there, and we need to make sure we are satisfying our legal requirements as New York State mandates and regulates us. But also, I believe we have ethical and social justice responsibilities to make sure that we are doing things at our jail that represent how we want our community to be. And so I know there are people who are saying we should not be doing anything to our jail. Well, that's not fair to the people who are inmates there or the corrections officers who work there. We maintain all our county facilities, and we need to look at the jail, too. We want to do that in a responsible way, and we're going to have a discussion about that tomorrow. So I apologize for being somewhat redundant of what Anna said on privilege of the floor, but I want to say it as well. We will be talking about that tomorrow. We're also going to have reports from the probation department, and we're going to receive a report from emergency response on call volumes there. I also just wanted to mention in the context of the budget discussion and the amount of money we're holding for board outs, we seem to be doing very well in that regard. Our budget accounts for roughly 9.5 board outs per day if we needed them. And when we looked at New York State pulling our variance, we didn't know where we were going to be. And I just looked at the website for the Sheriff's Department, and anybody can go there and look at the jail statistics. But we're running right around 61 people in our jail the last week, and we're averaging one board out a day. Some days we have zero, which is really, really impressive. But we are running significantly under what we budgeted in 2018. And as Jason developed, we're not sure why. But something seems to be going in our favor here. And so this seems to be pretty good news at present. But so that's, and I don't believe there's, yeah. That's my report.
Resolutions, right. Yeah. Thank you, Rich. Any questions or discussion? Lesson.
So I wouldn't make a public safety meeting tomorrow, but I do want to say that I am glad to hear that there'll be discussion happening about, you know, what to do with the jail. Not for the reasons that you talked about. We have people living there, but also have to think about people's health. You know, that place needs a lot of work when it comes to air quality, ventilation, all kinds of stuff. So, yes, people are living there, and we need to be concerned about that. We, like you said, we have a moral obligation. And I want to that repeated at the Public Safety Committee meeting that we need to be doing something. So thank you.
Rich, I wanted to ask. We had a letter from an officer, a corrections officer, and we understood that that was going to be fed back to staff. And are you expect to have a report on that list of things?
Certainly. We did receive a letter from a corrections officer outlining a fairly long list of issues identified by this person with the condition of the jail, including ventilation and a broad range of issues. And a lot of them we're certainly aware of. Some, you know, you can say, well, it's not as serious as that or whatever else. I don't think we're at a point for the committee to discuss it. We're certainly going to acknowledge that we received it. Staff is reviewing it. We're taking it very seriously because it lines up with our general conclusion that we do need to do something about our jail.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything else for Rich? And I will say again, I think, I won't be quite as, gee, golly whiz, we don't know why this is such a good number. These are such good numbers. I think we have some really good track record here of things that are really making a difference and working. And I really want to see a presentation at NYSAC in February about what we've done, because this is news. This is really, really big news at a very general policy level that affects every county in the state, and we have a great story to tell. And it's not that we should just, like, pat ourselves on the back. I want to try to convert some other counties. So thank you, Rich, for leading that and for taking what can be a controversial issue and taking a really responsible, serious look at it. Anna.
Clearly, I think, I concur. I second that. That's a fabulous idea. I would add that I think it would be great to have that NYSAC equivalent presentation right here in Tompkins County, because clearly the message hasn't gotten out.
Agreed. Good point. Absolutely.
I think that's a very good suggestion. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could do practice run here before NYSAC.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Buck, Chair.
Our next meeting will be Monday, September 10th at 4 p.m. We will have a representative from CNY Fair Housing to talk about source of income.
Thank you, Shauna. Questions, discussion? Thank you very much. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, David McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. We met this afternoon just prior to this meeting to discuss resolutions that have been passed and discussed at this meeting. And that's my report. Thank you.
All right. Any questions for Dave? Thanks. Anne.
I had sent Dave an email asking if we could add on to the next agenda the method that we have for informing residents of nearby projects. And so maybe we can talk about that. And as I was thinking about it, we have a process that Jeff Smith does, and I've talked to him about this, about notifying residents of projects, but this is a whole other thing of, like, buying property. So we probably I don't know if we have anything in place for that. But anyway, so we'll talk about possibly seeing what we have for that.
According to Leslin, somewhere in the history of F&I, there is... Right, and I'm not sure what was actually done in this particular case, because I think Mike Hall did it. But nevertheless, we will take a look at that and revisit that policy and see where it's at.
When we were dealing with Pine Tree Road many, 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 many years ago, so we have it.
Which actually points out some of the difficulties, because the project itself had absolutely no nearby neighbors. The people who came to the microphone were at least a half a mile away, more. So how do you define adjacent? So it can be a moving target, but at any rate, there's a plan somewhere. That's true. Right. Okay, anything else for Dave? Jonathan?
We do have a county land policy, and it's kept by planning, and they were at the committee with it today. So, but there is a county land sale and buying policy.
Okay, so then that's bring planning in, and that'll help the discussion. All right. Thanks very much, Dave and Leslin. Transportation Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We've done all the resolutions. We spent all the county money already. Transportation Committee will meet on Friday at 9 o'clock. We'll be talking with the city about its plans for Route 13 downtown.
Great. Any questions for Mike? All right. Thank you, Mike. Planning Development. Well, we'll skip Anna. Budget, Capital and Personnel Committee. Mike, do you want to take that one?
How about Government Operations?
Oh, sorry. You know, I just jumped. We'll go to Dan Klein, Government Operations Committee. Sorry, Dan.
No problem. Thank you. We are next meeting on Wednesday, September 19th at 9:30. You may have seen a headline in the Ithaca Times that the county had decided to suspend the Board of Assessment Reviews for next year, and that was an incorrect headline. It was discussed at TCOG, which I guess is recommending that. I haven't actually heard the report yet. So that's something we will be discussing at the next GO meeting, about whether we want to suspend those for 1 year.
We'll also be discussing expansion of assessment exemptions for persons with disability and limited income and seniors. And then also the last couple of months I've been talking about the policy on reimbursement for mileage for legislators, but I just want to let you know that actually we're not going to be tackling that at the next meeting, that the staff that are necessary for that discussion can't make that meeting, so that's held off until October. That's it.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions? Ann?
Am I informed correctly that the conversation was about whether we would be taxed on that, or is there a possible conversation that we wouldn't get reimbursement?
I mean, I guess all possibilities are on the table, but yeah, it does center around taxation. Okay. And an audit from the IRS from several years ago.
All right. Anything else for Dan? Thank you. So now we'll skip PDEC and go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
So you've had a terrific presentation tonight from our county administrator. He had, along with some of the rest of us, we held a press conference set up by Marsha Lynch so that the press would have advance notice of the budget message. That went very well. We had, five or six members of the press come, and that was a pretty good turnout for one of our press conferences, I thought. Remember, we start on the 6th with the EBC meetings. Those of you who haven't been to them before, it is the Expanded Budget Committee. It's a committee of the whole of the legislature, and it has its own special rules for voting, which simply means we don't always have to have 8 people there, although I have to say in the last couple of years we've had wonderful participation by most of the legislators, if not all of them, at most of the meetings for sure. We will be basically having presentations from the departments. They've been listed. They're listed in your white book. We'll try to get through them rapidly, but we want to get people's questions answered. And the process that's been used the last few years is that those meetings, rather than to enter into long diatribes that we county legislators are often prone to do, we're going to spend time asking relevant questions to try to get our answers, because then we will have some meetings to do actual proposals, changes, vote on over target requests, vote on other things that people want to add, and other kinds of amendments. We'll have a public forum in early October where people can come in and talk to us about our budget, and we will of course have our public hearing on that, I think at the end of October we're talking about at this point. On Thursday, we're going to have an early meeting of the regular budget committee. It's going to be an executive session. It'll be start at 4:30. I believe it's going to be at the old jail. And certainly others can join us if they would like to do that, which will begin discussing the survey that was done on the 4 direct report officers that we have for the county. We've all received those binders with all of that information in it, and there's a lot of things to absorb there. And we'll also be discussing how we proceed with the actual presentations with the discussions with the individual officers. Now, I doubt that we're going to get through 4 officers in an hour and trying to get over here by 5:30. So we will probably have to have at least one more of those meetings. And we'll just do our best, and we'll have to see how it goes. Thanks to Michelle Coco for trying to find a time in this really, really busy time of year for us to get together and talk about the direct reports. Now, we will have our regular budget meeting coming up on, the date slips my mind here, but I think we're going to, we only have three or four resolutions that we have to do, but I think we'll keep the time that we normally do. It's 4 o'clock. We'll have the EBC meeting at 4:30. It'll give us time for a break in between if we need it. That's pretty much my report.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? I'm sorry, what did you say is happening at 4?
Our regular budget committee on what?
September 11th.
September 11th.
September 11th. That's not this Thursday.
No. Okay. That's a week from now.
So then you'll do it at, that would be at 4:30 or 4?
4 o'clock. That's 4 o'clock. Our normal budget time.
Got it. Okay. Got it. Thank you. What?
This Thursday at 4:30 will be the executive session to begin talking about the reports on the direct reports. The binders about the direct reports.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Are there any, before we go to the TC3 resolution, sir, are there any questions about the budget process, about Thursday, about, you know, what's happening with that? Okay. All right. Then you have your TC3 resolutions.
Go to Anna.
Well, we could do those as part of your committee report.
They're under. Two resolutions about two important events at TC3. I'm going to defer to Henry Granison with respect to Resolution K, and I hope he'll read it, and I'd like to read Resolution L when that comes. Henry, would you move that resolution and read it for us?
Sure. The resolution in recognition of the 50th anniversary, the founding of Tompkins-Cortland Community College. Whereas a half century ago, the people of Tompkins and Cortland counties recognized the need to create an avenue for so many of its people who were hungering for higher education to better their lives. And whereas the promise of higher education had been denied to so many because of its cost, its accessibility, and its rigid academic structure, and whereas in partnership with the state of New York, the counties agreed to come together and co-sponsor the creation of a community college where open enrollment and modest costs could open a door for so many who had been left behind. And whereas Tompkins Cortland Community College began in an old high school building in the village of Groton, but soon moved to a new campus in the town of Dryden. And whereas over the years, the campus expanded and developed extension centers in both the city of Ithaca and the city of Cortland. And whereas initially serving mostly traditional high school graduates, the two sponsoring counties, their counterparts in directly adjacent counties, student enrollment grew so that to include non-traditional students working so hard to earn a degree despite grueling work and family commitments, and it grew to provide training in so many fields to assist businesses and workforce in our communities, and it became a pathway to advanced degrees at other educational institutions. And whereas the college became a leader in development of co-curricular courses in regional high schools and online course offerings, which led to the more rapid attainment of certificates and degrees by students, and whereas Tompkins Cortland Community College has been a model of inclusiveness and a leader in diversity with the broadening of its student body to include students from all over New York, the United States, and the world who come here to experience a first-class institution with faculty and staff dedicated first and foremost to student success, and whereas key support from Tompkins Cortland Community College Foundation and private donors has assisted the college in responding to the ever-evolving academic and social needs of students, and whereas the accomplishments of college alumni, both traditional and non-traditional, speak volumes about the great work that our community college does for all of us, now therefore be it resolved that Tompkins County Legislature extend its warmest congratulations Tompkins Cortland Community College, its students, faculty, administration, and staff on the 50th anniversary of its founding, and express its sincere thanks and support for all the college does for our community and for the world.
Thank you so much, Henry. Could I get a unanimous second on that?
Yes.
That was beautifully written and beautifully read. Thank you very, very much. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Henry. Mike?
And I'd like to move Resolution L, Resolution congratulating Arinthia T. Montague, Ph.D., on her inauguration as the fourth president of Tompkins-Cortland Community College.
Did you want to read it?
I do. Whereas it takes a steady hand on the tiller to sail a modern college on its course to fulfilling the dreams of its students and the community that relies on it, and whereas for 50 years Tompkins-Cortland Community College, named for its two co-sponsoring counties, has persevered in fulfilling its great mission of educating students who derive locally, regionally, and from around the world. And whereas in all that time it has been led by only three previous presidents, Hushang Bahar, Eduardo Marti, and Carl Haynes, who, by their leadership, navigated the college from its infancy through periods of growth and positioned it for service to students well into the future. And whereas, after a nationwide search, the Board of Trustees of Tompkins-Cortland Community College has selected Arinthia T. Montague, Ph.D., to be the fourth president of the college, and whereas Dr. Montague comes to the college with impressive credentials, she received her Bachelor of Arts degree from Truman State University, her Master of Arts degree from Lindenwood University, and her doctorate degree in higher education from the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And whereas Dr. Montague's work experience has prepared her well for her new role, she spent 11 years at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, where she advanced through several positions, including both Associate Vice Provost and Dean of Students, and most recently at Normandale Community College, the largest community college within the Minnesota state system. She devoted 7 years in positions up to and including becoming its Vice President of Student Affairs and Chief Diversity Officer. And whereas Dr. Montague has devoted her career to helping students, especially those from underrepresented populations, find success in their college experience. And whereas on September 7, 2018, Dr. Montague will be inaugurated as only the fourth president in the history of Tompkins-Cortland Community College, and will take up the task of steering that great institution for years to come. Now, therefore, resolve that the Tompkins County Legislature, on behalf of the people of our county, extends its hearty congratulations to Arinthia T. Montague, Ph.D., on the occasion of her inauguration as president of Tompkins-Cortland Community College, and extends to her our firm support and sincere best wishes as she leads this wonderful institution into the bright and happy future of service to our students and our community.
Thank you very, very much, Mike. Can I get a unanimous second on that? All right. And again, well, beautifully written and read. Thank you, Mike, for making both of these happen. Any discussion? Could I ask Kathy that these both be sent to, of course, TC3, but also to court.
Oh,
we didn't vote yet.
Oh, we didn't vote yet?
Yeah, no. And to Cortland County, please, the Cortland County Legislature. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you so very much. Appreciate it greatly. All right, and I hope folks will be able to get there on Friday afternoon. Sounds like it's 2 o'clock, right, Mike?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Okay. Okay.
I called there and they said they
wanted
there at 1:30.
Is that right? 1:30 on Friday?
They want to put you on the platform.
So they can put us on their phones. They said to us VIPs. Some of you will be on the platform. Some of us will be on the VIPs sitting up front. They would like us to try
that. Did they want us in robes?
Okay. Was that sent out to us or just kind of?
I called because I didn't get the deadline because we were going to go to a golf tournament. So I missed the deadline. So instead of just mailing it in, I called. And they said 1:30.
Okay, 1:30. Your mic? All right, and
no, they don't need to hear this.
What?
Your microphone's not picking you up.
Okay. All right. Okay, 1:30 Friday. Got it.
This supposed to be there.
All right. All right. We're really getting punchy here. Anna, did you have your hand up?
Oh, no, I can move on to my report.
Okay. Is there anything else on TC3? Awesome. Okay. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Anna Kellis, Chair.
We will be meeting on Monday, the 24th of this month, from 3 to 5 p.m. in this chamber, and that is my report.
Awesome. I love it. Okay. Any questions for Anna?
Almost close to no report, but
okay.
I try.
All right. Any questions? Thank you very much. Can I get the motion on the minutes from August 21st? Moved by Anna, seconded by Rich. Discussion? All in favor, please raise your hand. Is any opposed? That's unanimous. That's it, right? Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Oh, yeah.
Moved by Anna, seconded by Dave. All in favor, we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.